I don't forget things.
Oh. I've made some notes. Some
Yeah.
of them are more relevant than others. Yeah,
Yeah, I just sort of
I make notes
took
for
a few points
anything.
as I went along. Sorry,
Might be
Drew, you're
cheap.
very quiet
Might
compared to the rest of
I
us, Drew.
turn myself up?
Yeah, a little bit. Go for it. Don't be shy.
Okay. How's that?
Oh, that's quite good, yeah.
That good? Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's good. We've got it then. Yeah.
Different to how it's usually good. So, I make my notes in Vim. I don't do them on paper.
Yeah, I don't like, especially when I'm broadcasting or recording, I like to have things on a screen so that I can see them and not be, because otherwise what I'll do is partway through the show it'll switch to showing like one Vim screen with some notes, and then it'll be 20 minutes of that before I realize and stuff, you know.
And I know how to quit piece of paper. I don't know how to quit them. How do
Yeah.
you quit? You
Anyway, I
write
use CAC.
colon Q.
We're back to our toilet humor there. I use CAC, not Vim. Cacum.
Hey.
It's excellent. Right.
Okay.
Hello again. Hello. We're doing a special, extra special. We're doing this live.
Like filmed live in front of a studio audience.
And indeed.
Yeah.
Happy days is filmed before a live studio audience. What live studio? What's the option? You know, filmed before a dead studio audience? I don't know.
Empty studio.
Yeah. Yes, hello to the live chat people, and hello to video people. Hello.
Hello.
Hello to
Which,
everyone.
just quickly before we start, which do you prefer, video people or the live people?
I
Not thinking.
I love them all equally.
Got that.
Oh no, Andrew's not happy
Got
with that answer.
that.
Right, okay. This show is nominally
No.
about a program called The Expanse,
Can
which which is a sci-fi show that we love, Drew and I, and we got Chris into. And Chris is, I believe, loving it as well.
Oh, very much so.
And we decided since the series, well, Drew had watched the series end as an extra length episode, but it is actually 10 episodes, not 9. So, and Chris and I had both had it as 10 episodes. So what we did is we just watched the last episode, stroke the last two episodes, all at once, and we're going to do a so it's a double show. So we might be on a bit longer, but that's all right. We faff and chat, and we definitely go off at tangents. Now the show is very good at raising social, political, economic, religious, all these kind of things. Anyway, and we are of course of the chatty bent, as it were. So.
Well, no, in that kind of vein, there's because this one thing I love about this show is there's nothing arbitrary in it. Like everything connects up. Like I don't know if you noticed, Chris, but like the kid stealing water in one of the
Yes.
early episodes, and the reason he's stealing water is because the Griegers have gone somewhere else. This episode, we learn
Some
where
of my
the Griegers
notes.
went.
Some of my notes.
We do, and actually, just an incidental little detail is actually, threads through and actually it means something.
Yeah, everything
Actually,
means
on that
something.
detail, I picked up another one of those.
Go on.
So when they are circling the Anubis in the last, as in the last episode, episode 8, Alex says, "Sweet landing job," which.
See, I've made notes and I've actually got.
You can't do
Oh
this on Vim.
no! Yeah, you can't do that on Vim, yeah.
I got my pen. But and it sort of clicked into place. It's like, of course, Julie Mao's like known for being a good
Great, but
pilot,
yeah, Julie's a
race
really good
back.
pilot.
So she squeezes it in there with a Lionel Plansky
Annoying.
going. So should we start with, because I was just saying in the
Well,
preamble
I
before as
think
well.
since all the story threads have come together in one place, we should just take it linearly this time.
Well, I was going to say, because we were just saying, like, because Chris was really interested in which ships went where and who was on which ship, and like you get the answers, like you get Julie Mao's full story. So start with that.
She even does a sort of neo-noir detective-y commentary a little bit.
Oh, there's a
Although I
little
get
bit
the
of
idea
like,
that that's been recorded
which
for the that's been
no.
recorded for DAWs, isn't it?
So first off, what did you think of that bit?
Sorry, the
So
flashback
it's a
because
flashback, but it's tell so we've
yeah,
seen
sometimes
everybody else's
flashbacks can be a bit
story.
annoying, yeah, but
Now it's Julie Mao's story.
so it's nowhere near as bad as what I consider or the thing that made me hate flashbacks, which was Lost, where it's
Oh,
like,
yeah, I
you
can
know,
understand that.
we've got like an hour-long episode and we're going to dedicate half of it to just a story
that doesn't really add anything to the piece.
And honestly, for years, Lost made me hate TV.
I'm not surprised, really.
So this wove into it a lot better. There was a point to it. It wasn't just boring character building. It solves mysteries. It's still like, I don't know if it would have been more interesting or whatever if it was actually done strictly in a chronological order, because this is less of a flashback and more telling the story out of order. Now, whether or not that's to evoke more mystery than is actually there.
But Julie's part is shown in order.
I mean, this is
timeline that they're putting into place overall over the rest of the series that we've seen.
It's not shown. It's not, what Chris means is it's not shown during the rest of the show when it happens.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
But what it does is it helps you line up things chronologically, like it should, because it shows little bits of Miller that we've already seen. So it's that happened at the same time as this. And one thing I've always not quite been 100% on is, she has a vision of Miller coming through the door right before he comes through the door
with the bird
and his deeds like a saint. Does she die just a moment before they arrive? Is that actually what we're supposed
That's
to
what
take
I think
that?
We're getting the impression of, because we hear noises and stuff outside. I think she's just dying.
So if that's the case, that's not really a flashback.
Well, kind of isn't. It's a flashback that melds into the real time, I would say. Because obviously the bits about the previous ship...
It's not a flashback, it's a flat...
A flash in?
Flat.
A flat.
Flat. I mean, obviously the stuff where she's on the Anubis and she's on the Scopuli...
Yeah, it says 7 weeks earlier.
It is a flashback, but that contextualizes the current bit a little. I'll give it a pass. I don't even know if I'm really calling it a flashback. It's part flashback.
So it doesn't annoy you, is the bottom line here.
Was it satisfying for you to find out, you know, once and for all, like, the order of...
And you see how the bloodstain got on the ship, on the ship and everything.
And, so that kind of made a lot... Yeah, like, that's not... At all, that did it as well as it.
Has anybody got notes saying, Julie, don't put your fucking fingers in the goo? She's like, weird fucking glowing, weird scary fucking goo. Stick my fingers in it.
So,
all right. So, can I get my first note? So, my first note is quite a simple one. The signal that Holden hears is not the beacon.
That's all mixed together.
There's a mixed set of signals coming from the Scopuli.
So he hears what she's saying into that thing for the OPA, for doors.
Yes, she hears the first bit of that.
I've always thought that sounds like what Holden heard, but it can't be, because that's a specific thing for...
It's Julie doing it while she's in the hold. Remember, that ship, the Anubis, is a stealth ship, and it's hanging around there still.
That's
the thing. That's the funny thing about it, is he doesn't actually catch the Scopuli signal in that little tune in thing that he does. He catches Julie's signal, which is kind of interesting in a way. But you know, the beacon is just some sort of automatic distress signal. Or there's two ways of looking at it. It could be that he just happens to pick it up because it's broadcast from the same vague area, or it could be that Julie's making that recording. And whoever set up the false beacon is just capturing various radio signals to make it seem realistic. Yeah. So either that it's way, not just a single band, it's like all the bands that you might hear.
Could this have something to do with the blue goo?
Possibly.
Because I think the blue goo affects the electromagnetic spectrum, right? Because they introduce radiation into this. I'm going to call it this episode. These episodes, right?
Yeah. Let's not jump too far ahead.
No, but like the thing. Okay, but obviously, radio waves are on the electromagnetic spectrum along with everything else, right? Yeah. So, could it just be that if you're in vicinity of the blue goo,
that makes more sense than you realize currently.
Yes.
I think I'm putting some pieces together.
I have to say, for the benefit of the audience who might not have seen this show before, who might be watching the live, or you're just catching up with everything, Drew and I have seen the show more than once. Chris hasn't. Chris is watching it. We're forcing him to watch it slowly so that we can all enjoy his reactions. So sometimes Drew and I have to develop a bit of a poker face. So if you do know the show, please don't say anything about the future. Don't no spoilers for Chris. Just an aside.
Well, you poker faced me on a few things that I've come to realise.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, there's quite a lot of things revealed in this one. Another little clue about the fact that the Anubis is infected really early on is when the commander, that woman that's in command of the Anubis, or in command of the troops anyway, she says, it's hot in here, and she wants the environmental controls sorted or whatever.
She's got
she's COVID. Already got it, yeah.
She's got the blue COVID.
And
you've already covered that one. Ugh.
I mean, I'm assuming that like this isn't the case, but it's not like it thrives in heat. So she's like, oh, is it cold in here? Not necessarily as like, oh, are you a bit chilly, but more like, is it too hot in here? Is the blue goo going to start growing if it gets too hot?
No, she's infected.
She's the carrier at the moment.
It definitely has. I mean, this might be a bit, you know, but she has like. When we see Julie, or when Miller sees Julie, when we see it in this episode, but when Miller sees it on the screen before, she's like, she's coughing, she's acting like she's got the flu.
And I don't know if the subtitles are in any way, like, you know how they put names on subtitles?
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I think if these subtitles are correct, her name is Woman.
Let's take a note of that for your future.
I've always heard it as Julie Mao, but...
So, yeah.
Well, speaking of characters, we meet a new character played by Daniel Cash, K-A-S-H. Now, Daniel Cash, for anyone who doesn't know, is Spunkmeyer from Aliens. You know, the
Spunkmeyer,
the co-pilot from Aliens.
Okay, I did not realize that, no.
And he was in Due South. He was either Huey or Dewey, one of the two cops that they take the piss out of.
In what, sorry?
Due South.
Okay.
You know that show?
Yeah, I love that show.
The show about the Mountie. I love it.
Now, is he Dresden?
He's Dresden, yes.
Oh, okay.
Chris gets Chris does well. Usually he asks us the name of somebody, and if we don't remember it, he assumes that they're going to die instantly. but there's some people that are still going strong by the end of this episode.
This guy is like one of the main baddies.
He's the big baddie as far as we. Well, he's not the big baddie.
He's near the top of the tree.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the huge revelation in this. I forgot about the huge revelation.
Are you talking about Julie Mayo saying that the weapon belongs to her father? Because we do get the blue goo belongs to her father.
There's more than one thing that points to
okay, so what's the big...
Thoth. That's it. Well, Jean-Pierre Mao is behind it all.
Thoth. Whatever the Thoth.
What's Thoth?
A Thoth?
Well, Thoth is...
It's Thoth you get in bottles.
Thoth.
You pull it in your chip.
Thoth.
They invented blue Thoth.
This stuff.
Bluthoth. So basically, Dresden, when he's like, when it's all going on, the experiment, the beacons sending information up through, he says, upload it to Thoth.
Oh, and Thoth is another Egyptian deity of some sort, isn't it?
Isn't that Thoth? Is it spelt Thoth, pronounced Thoth, like Anubis?
Thoth, in Egyptian religion, a god of the moon, of reckoning, of learning, and of writing. Okay.
Maybe they've called their computer that or something.
Of the moon. Who else do we know is going to the moon?
Well, remember, in this one, there's not just one moon.
Yeah, but the Egyptian god of the moon is the moon.
Sure, but I think the learning
Luna.
Thing...
Luna. Remember, it's Luna now. We're talking about this.
It's me and the old timey ways, isn't it? But
woman and the moon.
Woman and the moon, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've said several times, like, just bearing in mind, it's Earth and the moon.
I've always maintained that's not trying to throw you off anything or confuse anything.
Pedantic and going, yes. The UN isn't just Earth.
That's just me being pedantic. The UN is the moon, the Earth. Mm-hmm. And the near Earth and near Moon space stations.
I love that you put the moon first. You're literally sponsored by Big Moon.
Do we have that last episode?
Yep, in the stinky pocket of Big Moon.
Pocket of Big Moon, yeah. Hi, Disco 303.
Hello, Disco.
Ooh, time for Disco.
Special live edition of Space Virgins.
Oh, do you lights, Chris?
Sorry?
Do you lights? Time for Disco.
Oh, I do have the lights. I do have the Disco lights, don't I?
Vision. All right,
Disco break.
We need to all have that and it'd be synchronized.
Work with.
Yeah. Big moon. Paul, if you'd seen the last episode, we ought to do it. it devolved from some other discussion. It devolved into, yes, I'm in the pocket of Big Moon, and yeah, that came up. So Daniel Cash, who plays Dresden, is known to sci-fi fans. He's also he does voices for video games and stuff as well, which you guys are into. I mean, voice actors.
He obviously he was set up like he has main character energy. I'm just going to put it that way, right? Like, you know, I don't know if that was the gravitas of his acting or the direction or whatever. But
he's a great actor, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was doing a good acting job. That's what, you know.
He's very good at being creepy. When he's like, oh, she's got more than enough in her. Like, very creepy.
Yeah, he is very, very cold. Yeah. And, sort of scientifically detached and everything. It's
So just to catch up, I think I've worked out the ships, where they go, what they are, what they're doing, right?
Okay, so here we go. This is the... what's the word I'm looking for? The
culmination. Apex,
culmination of Chris Holcomb theories over the whole series. So here we go.
So the Scopuli is the ship that Julie Mao is on, where she left series with some other OPA chaps that we see in this flashback or this segment of her plotline that is in the past. Because I'm not even entirely sure. Like, it's just telling the story from another perspective at this point.
You threw me a little bit with chaps, like Belterchap.
Belterchap, yeah.
Belterlora.
So they are in the Scopuli, and they're talking about Julie's dad's money, Jules Pierre Mao. See, I'm getting better at the names.
Yeah.
So she presumably, because of who she is, knows that there's some sort of we'll call it a super weapon for now. I'm not entirely convinced it is a super weapon, but it's obviously like weapony of sorts, right? I'll say why the stealth ship is
part of that description, I think.
Yeah, the stealth ship is part of that description. But also, Dresden says that I've got it written down here. She's going to save us all when she's talking about Julie Mao, right? Like, you don't save everyone with a super weapon, right? Unless he is that kind of like, what's the...
No, this is talked about later in the show. Or in the second episode, I think. Maybe.
Okay. But he says she's going
to... Somebody else mentioned... Oh, God, no. Ah, see, the one that I don't have is who mentions it, who talks... I think it might be Miller who says Julie was trying to save the Belters. From this weapon being used on them. That's what she's. Yeah. That's what is explained later.
Yeah.
But Dresden says she's going to save us all, implying that.
All like, Dresden so, says it as well. Yeah, in a different way.
Not to piss on your, because I think that's a valid thingy. But as far as we know, he could mean we're going to use it to destroy the Belters and the Martians. It's going to save us.
Yeah. We don't know who he thinks he's saving. Mm. Yeah.
But for example,
sorry, I got mixed up with the other.
If for example, this blue goo eats radiation, for example, then and it can potentially be used as a way to protect or help people who either suffer radiation poisoning because there's a lot of that in space and all that kind of stuff, or turn radiation into usable energy, or which doesn't seem like a problem in this universe, or something to that effect. But because they introduce radiation as a major component here, really for the first time. So obviously,
don't forget that radiation when we're what they're talking about on the station is like radioactive radiation.
Yes. Right, yeah.
Gamma and neutron and so on. But like it's all everything from light to microwaves through radio and all that's all that's all electromagnetic radiation. It's all the same stuff as far as the Bugu is concerned. It was feeding off like the lights and the screens in Julie Mao's hotel room. So as far as the Blue Goo's concerned, all radiation is equal. You know, it doesn't have a special appetite for like nuclear radiation, but presumably that's the highest energy radiation they can give it to feed it, you know, for this experiment that they're doing.
Yeah. And also, it could be the case that what's the other one, the long not on the ultraviolet, the other end,
infrared
is it, the the stealth ships, no, visible light. Yeah, so I don't know if that blue goo has anything to do with
if it absorbs energy. Radiation, thinking of it in terms of a stealth composite makes sense. You want something that absorbs rather than reflects. Yeah
Maybe it's like a bit like as I was alluding to in the last episode, a MacGuffin, insofar as it just allows you to completely the hope is that it can allow you to fully manipulate the electromagnetic spectrum, but it might get out of control, or it might get hungry, or it might, you know, become sentient. It seemed like there was some sentience there.
There's a key line from Dresden about that.
It's learning or something. It's like it helps.
He does mention it learns. They want to help it to learn.
A bit at the end when it copies Adam Jensen, like it's clearly
for the benefit of the audience. Adam Jensen is not who they're talking about. The actor who plays the voice of Adam Jensen and the face as well, is he?
But he also plays a cyber enhanced spy.
He's round Adam Jensen.
His name's Kenzo, and he's a character who's a sort of spy in this show.
Yeah. I kind of like him, and I'm a bit worried that we're not going to. I don't know if they're dead. Like, I'm not. I know that Jules Pierre Mao, on hearing that Julie Mao was dead, cried. Like, he had the tears running down his face.
That's the most emotion he seemed to show about it, though. He was very happy with the experiment and everything.
Yeah.
I suppose if you're going to kill 100,000 people, even your own daughter is not that important.
He's a billionaire. They're young.
Yeah, but it could be the case. I'm assuming not, but it could be the case that when the blue goo gets you, you can come back alive.
We can call it the proto molecule now if you want, because it's mentioned that's the final.
Oh, exactly. Proto molecule.
It's actually said at least twice in the show. Yeah,
such a struggle.
Because I've been trying not to say proto molecule all series with Chris, but it's called the proto molecule. And you also find out, not in a flashback or anything, but from the, where are we? We get the revelation on Phoebe. Yeah, it was a revelation on Phoebe. So they discovered it on Phoebe. They didn't, no, they might have discovered it in a lab or whatever, but they certainly didn't deliberately make it, is the point.
It's not invented. It's...
That's made clear in the episode when he says it's the he's talking about blah blah blah, the revelation we had on Phoebe, and then the proto molecule is named as such.
A revelation. I mean, that could be anything. That's a very vague term.
Well, the way that he says it in context, it's pretty clear that he means they found something rather than
also a word with invented spiritual connotations.
Yes, exactly. There's more to that. Given that we're so we've got let's have a quick since we're not going linearly. That lasted about 10 seconds.
We start out linearly for about 3 seconds, and then
Well,
it's hard to do.
I did notice looking at the time signatures a couple of episodes ago. It took us 15 minutes to even start talking about the Expanse because we were talking about food, and then by the 30-minute mark, we had another 5 minutes on food as well. So you know that's us. Come for the actual content and discover. Faff and nonsense.
Discover faff and nonsense.
Faff and nonsense. I've forgotten what we were saying. See that? I've even managed to distract myself from what I was about to say, since we're not going linearly.
Well, I've got a question about...
Yeah, go for it. Chris's questions are what usually kicks off everything anyway.
Proto-molecule. So, does that have anything to do with protogen, which I'm assuming, or I think... Is the Jules Mao company?
Jules Pierre Mao does have a company called Protogen, yes.
That's
God damn it. I'd never put that together.
The when he meets the UN people, they mention it.
Yeah. Yes, and I mean subtitles help me out a little bit here. All right, because and it was quite the subtitles are very good on this one actually, because they distinguish between the gangsters from series that were brought over to be paid thugs, and the protogen mercenaries or protogen employees or whatever. We do learn about the distinction at some point in there, because then they realize that all the gangsters that they brought on to act as like
muscle,
they're getting left behind.
They're just getting shoved in as part of the experiment.
Belters are belters, it seems. However, the thing that does the big question I've got. Like, why, right? See, what is Jules Pierre Mao? Like, what's his game? Like, does he want money? Is it earthen supremacy or like colonialism? Does he want to wipe out the belters so that they can have free reign of the resources in the belt? And if so, what for? Is there like a resources shortage or a resources war?
Are you trying to tell us that the finale leaves you with more questions than answers? Because it does. Drew and I were saying this before the show. We're just gagging to get on to series two now that we've seen the end of series one.
It's not like a shitty Lost finale where it's just
they do resolve an awful lot in the last three episodes. Yeah. There's loads resolved.
It resolves certain things.
The Julie Mao story is pretty much completely resolved, isn't it? Because we get the timeline filled in and all the players are introduced.
Yeah. I guess as it currently stands, Miller's character, we don't know if he lives. Well, I'm assuming he survives based on the end of, he's in the ship, he's getting.
Yeah, they make it to the Rocinante, yeah.
Yes, and I'm assuming that the radiation levels that they've got, they survived because of Holden's quick thinking to just basically take all of the medicine in.
Yeah, take all of the medication to keep them going. Yeah,
The ship has got, this is a complete sci-fi fiction, but like the ship has got anti-radiation; it can sort them out. Taking the anti-radiation.
Hello, Benny. Welcome.
Welcome, Benny. taking the anti-radiation meds like gives them the time to get to
and I mean it's
I love what he says, like just painkillers, vitamins, whatever they've got, just
so that's that's a good bit of first aid that we learned there, isn't it, is when in doubt.
I learned recently, I watched the miniseries Chernobyl, which is
excellent, quite good.
And I learned as I went on to read, like what radiation actually does, like extreme radiation, what actually does to the body, and it is not nice.
No, it's not nice.
I think in the show they talk about like liquefying from the inside out.
That's
pretty much it.
It starts through your intestinal area, I believe.
Yeah. I wrote a little Halloween story about radiation, but it kind of is about being cooked from the inside out.
I mean, because radiation is terrifying in an almost like.
This is the problem. This is the thing about nuclear war that people don't. This is why shows like Threads were needed.
Threads is great. Threads depressing is an excellent show. Living fuck, but great.
Yeah, but this is the point: is nuclear weapons aren't like any other bomb. They don't just blow something up and that's it. They create a massive environmental disaster, and if there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Everybody's fucked. There's no way to win a nuclear war, you know.
Monkey brains, radiation is supernatural. Like, it is something invisible that can kill us, which is not like really anything else that we encounter. I mean, you could say like certain poisonous gases, but it's a weird thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, because like the type that can cook you from the inside out. Of course, all your nerve endings are on the outside of your skin. Mm. So it's already done the damage by the time it even starts to hurt. And then before you know it, you go down to like you know, inspect a rash or something you've got, and you turn out your leg has turned to cooked meat.
And
this is, you're already dead.
It's also one of those things, a certain, like, I was thinking, there's certain mushrooms that poison you. So, like, you feel really shitty, and then you feel better for a while, and then you're dead.
Yeah, that's radiation poisoning, radiation sickness, rather. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've seen, there was a documentary, I think it was the BBC that made it, called Hiroshima, and it's like survivor stories told in dramatic fashion. Mm-hmm. And you know, that those stories should be much more public than, you know, everything that people hear.
We're not sponsored by big nuclear weapons, but modern nuclear weapons are a lot. In terms of radiation, because the radiation is actually an unwanted side effect, because they want to turn as much as the radioactive material.
They want all the energy to be.
So you want as little radiation as possible. And modern nuclear weapons that are designed for it have relatively, like, it's not as bad. Like, if Chernobyl.
It depends on the type of weapon.
Yeah. I mean, there are designed to be very radioactive and not have a huge explosion. Yeah. But.
Yeah. But of course, also there's
a mixture of them around, even in the existing armories, arsenals. Yeah. There's still a mixture because they cost so much to produce in the first place.
But also nowadays, with drone strikes, we've got better weapons, because if you're a colonial power and you want to take over a country, then nuking it's not going to do no good, because then you can't use it. Yeah.
Well, nuclear weapons are kind of specific to the kind of conflict we have between Russia and the US, where they're mutually incompatible. They're both very powerful, and in their minds, you know, one can only exist, you know, this town ain't big enough for the both of us, kind of thing. So in that sense, strategic nuclear weapons, you know, if you're insane, makes sense. But
they're only a weapon of a madman. That's all they are.
But with drones, you've got like surgical strikes.
Especially given what's happening in the world right now, can we just sort of not fall into using propaganda language? There's no such thing as a surgical strike. There is no such thing. Okay. A bomb is a bomb. It hits everything in a certain area. It's not, you know. That was something that was started with the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, or was it the second one? Jeez, I can't remember now. With the Gulf War on TV, was all the bombs, you know, missiles flying down chimneys and all that sort of thing. And it's like, it's hit this house and left the other stuff. Most of that was propaganda. Most of that wasn't true. Most of it was a lie and shown to be very, very soon afterwards. But people only care about and remember the actual thing. So what the military call a surgical strike, or what politicians call a surgical strike, I bet the military don't. What the politicians call a surgical strike is propaganda. Mm. And I mean, that's happening in the world right now. They're talking about, the Israelis are talking about killing a Hezbollah leader or whatever, and they flattened an entire neighborhood to do it. That's not very surgical. Just saying, I'm not picking on you in any way, but these drones are armed with bombs still. It's still a bomb. It's not a bullet. It's not a lethal dart or something. It's still a bomb going off.
We're on the nuclear tangent. What's the name of that? I think he's some kind of Scandinavian. I think older dude who narrates he's an actor, but he also narrates documentaries a lot. He's got a very interesting, weird voice.
Oh, I know who you mean.
He's not the Fallout 3 guy. What's his name? He's Perlman. Ron Perlman?
No, he's American.
I can see his face and everything.
I can't think of his name either, so I can't find it. But there's a documentary about storing nuclear waste.
The Onkola one.
Could be narrated by him, narrated by this dude, and it's really very, very good. I'll put it somewhere at some point.
Onkola,
is that
the Onkola? Well, this is the other thing. I got in a bit of a discussion, but I didn't have time to follow it up earlier. I think he's just arrived, by the way. French ghost has arrived. Where he's saying, oh, well, the new nuclear power isn't as bad. All these things are things that we've been told that, yes, they're not as bad, but they're still fucking horrendous. Same with the nuclear weapons thing. Still fucking horrendous. There is still fallout. There's still radiation problems. And if there's a mass nuclear set of nuclear explosions, then the radiation is just as bad.
I mean, we shouldn't get into the debate over this. I'm pro nuclear power with a lot of caveats, but
The big caveat is it's been around for 80 years and we don't know how to store the waste material. And then French Ghost said, "Oh, we'll just store it until we learn how to use fusion." Yeah, but it's still poisoning whatever's around it at the time.
I think that was a joke.
Okay, I'll let him off then.
I mean, to be fair, at this point, like, both solar and wind are going to kind of supersede it anyway, right?
Yeah, well, that's it.
Yes, the problem, let's not go too long on this, but the problem with solar and wind is, like, you get most of the energy when you don't need it. Storage is a problem. We don't have, it depends, again, it's all very geographically contingent, but in certain places you don't have great ways of, hydrogen is not a solution, by the way. There's not great ways of storing the energy. You want a baseline that gives you energy whenever you need it, and nuclear doesn't produce CO2. That is a big fucking advantage of it, and it produces energy all the time. So if we can do that safely, it's a good option. It's as to whether we can or not.
Yeah, but we can also,
But,
like, I mean, China are doing some pretty nifty stuff with sodium-based batteries, which, you know, could be something in that regard. Like, I mean, it's, you know, like, there's still scope for improvement. But, like, at the moment, here in the UK, we are generating huge amounts of wind energy.
Well, pumping water up and down into places, pressurizing things. Mm. There are ways to store the energy. But
yeah. And also, like, this one thing is, like, there are ways to live. Like, I know talking about, like, any kind of sacrifices or change in lifestyle never usually goes down well. But there are ways to live when electricity is just works differently, right? Like, as in, maybe bills are cheaper when, you know, if the bills are cheaper or something when the energy's running, when the energy's, like, when it's windy, that's when you do your sticky.
So much more of a focus on just using less power.
Problem is that the problem is that the reason that the cleaner power generation is not focused on, and things like, you know, getting people to change their habits isn't there, because it doesn't benefit anybody. It doesn't profit. It's profit that drives the whole thing. I've just got the name. The name is, there's Carl Reinhold Brechenjelm, Michael Jensen, and Berit Lundqvist are the three names. I'm thinking of either. But that's who, one of those is the voice of the Onkelo one. Mm.
But yeah, solar takes some materials that aren't hugely plentiful and stuff like that. Like, there are limits to what we can do with solar and wind.
Well,
and
there are, but then...
While we're on the storage thing, French Ghosty says it wasn't a joke, because it's the way to do it. No, it's not safe. It's not safe. And storing it in steel barrels, no, that is not safe. That is incredibly unsafe. The steel becomes irradiated.
Well, there's a page on Wikipedia. There was this, I think
nuclear
it was an American...
is the cleanest power source. No, wind and solar are the cleanest power sources. There's no waste. There's no nuclear waste problem.
Nuclear waste that comes from uranium-based nuclear power plants lasts or is dangerous for about 10,000 years, right? Yeah. So there was this, in America, the Nuclear Whatever Agency set up this group of, like, scientists, poets, artists, and so on, tasked with, if civilization collapses, how do we communicate? Like, if we bury all the nuclear waste, how do we
tell people that it's dangerous?
Yeah, this is dangerous. And they came up with some wacky ideas. One of them was glow-in-the-dark cats that glow in the dark when they're near radiation, and then sow superstitions about avoiding glow-in-the-dark cats. One of the ideas was to create a religion, because they've noticed, like, religions last a long time. So let's create a religion and a priesthood that's tasked with, you know...
Yeah, the Onkelo thing goes into some of this as well, because it's not about Onkelo, it's about worldwide stuff.
Really, really interesting. There's a Wikipedia page about it, and it's great.
Yeah. But yeah, and again, the French goes to, and you're preparing the next thing via the fusion reactor. Again, look it up. We're not that close to being able to make fusion, and clean fusion is a complete... pipe dream.
Well, we can do fusion, but doing it in a way that, you know,
doing it a way that doesn't. Yeah.
It's one of those things that every 10 years we're 10 years away from it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I remember it being a thing.
And nuclear is not. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, yeah, you've heard, when I was a kid, it was going to be that we were going to have cold fusion or clean fusion or whatever.
Thorium reactors, the waste is only radioactive for 500 years as opposed to 10,000, and it produces around, like, a 10,000th as much of the waste. So that's better.
But I mean, here we go. Here, French goes to say, wind turbine aren't profitable. Why? But you're saying they cost like, more. This is propaganda that the oil and gas companies
feed people. If it's that or we all die, I'll take unprofitable energy generation.
Yeah. Why does it have to make a profit? Even the way you're framing it, French Ghosties, shows where you've got that information from.
Mm.
You know? It shows where you've got the information from. They're talking about, making money out of it. It's not about making money. It's about powering the human civilization.
Hydro is good, but it takes a ton of energy to build a dam in the first place.
It's very
destructive to
the environment.
I've got to actually on you that one. I know a guy that owns a hydro business, and what you can do with hydroelectric, it's massively underutilized because we think of hydrogen dams as like big things, like the Hoover Dam and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, no, smaller scale.
Well, you can't get smaller scale. Yeah.
You can.
Well, you get a water mill.
Yeah, water mill
existed for hundreds of years,
you know. And it's not complex technology. Like, this is a small business. This is, you know, this is not tech, you know, high tech in any way you think. But you can build and also make them very environmentally friendly. You can make them very discreet looking as well. You got to be a little bit careful of like making sure you don't fuck with the water flow too much, that you don't end up sticking a, you know,
you don't want to stop the river still.
Yeah, or you don't want to like accidentally just like redirect water into someone's neighborhood or anything like that. But, like,
No, I think a big part of the solution is going to be more localized power generation and community-owned power generation.
That's the answer to so many social problems.
But also,
is doing it locally instead of huge companies trying to run things.
And also,
for
the thing about the wind turbine thing that Ghosty was saying, I remember reading a blog article about this engineer in, I think he was like in Mozambique or something, and he basically managed to make a wind turbine out of stuff he found in a junk heap.
Yeah, like, that's it. Yeah. People that are making wind turbines are trying to make money. That's why they are not profitable. The people that are building the wind turbines are charging more money for them. This is the point. It's capitalism that's destroying it all. It's not, the technology is never a problem. And the solar panels are barely profitable. Again, profitable, or they can run things. We want them to run things. We don't care about making money out of that.
I would like for our species not to be wiped out.
Another
thing that's been influenced by capitalistic propaganda is like the doomerism. Oh, like, we don't deserve to live anyway. All we do is war and destroy environments.
Well,
like,
I also subscribe to that, so let's not, you know. I change.
I think that way of thinking can be dangerous, because it's very easy to go from that to having no respect for.
It's the despair
of knowledge, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Oh no, for sure. Yeah,
and awareness.
Hang on, I've got one more point with Benny's point about solar power's profitability, etc.
Not talking about profitability.
Oh right, okay.
Benny's saying his parents have solar power for years, and they're not giving up anything. No.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay, never mind. I was just thinking, like, it's the tariff. They screw you on the tariffs, but that's not either.
No, but you can get your own solar power fitted. Mm. I mean, I know.
My next door neighbors build themselves a new bungalow, and that's entirely solar.
Mm. I know people. A friend of my stepdad has.
That's not because they're leftists or environmentalists. That's because they're cheapskates.
Yeah, and yeah. This is the thing. If you tell enough people about the reality of the prices, and, you know, not this propaganda that French Ghosty seems to have picked up. Sorry, French Ghosty, but you know, but yeah, there's a maker friend of my stepdad's who does all his electricity. He does all his electricity for all his projects purely through. He's got like sheds and lean-tos and everything in his back garden, and it's all just solar panelled. Everything's there, plus he stores stuff up in batteries, and he's got a converter for the house, so like a big chunk of his home electricity is also using it. And that's just little scavenged ones.
Christopher, get us back on track.
Yeah.
Okay, also, but one final super extra more thing is China are actually putting a lot of money into solar panels.
But also into nuclear. So,
that is propaganda, French Ghosty. Capitalistic point of view is propaganda, but anyway, yes, we don't mind.
All right.
We don't mind a tangent, and we do them ourselves without any help from external forces normally. But we knew this was going to happen, so we're all right. We've allowed for it. But yes, let's get back on track. How did we even get to that from the Expanse anyway?
The radiation.
That was right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So So the protogen mercs, which is what they're referred to in the subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you think of mercs, you don't tend to think of like a disciplined, armed force, right?
Mm.
Like, I'm not
short-term
sure.
Discipline. They usually know each other. Squads like, are usually okay.
To my understanding, like Blackwater and ones like that, like they're evil, but they're very competent. They're all like ex-special forces and stuff, so they've got the training. To be fair, they didn't train them, but they have the training. And yeah, so I would agree. I would imagine that most mercs are shit.
Yeah,
like
CPM.
So this is top end mercs. This is from.
Okay. Yeah. This is the best mercs money can get.
This is more think
and there might
more,
also be Jules Pierre Mau's private army, basically.
I was gonna say think more East India Company than mercs as we think, like mercenary bands. Like this is essentially a private nation.
Yeah. That's kind of what it could effectively look like, because mercs spans the full spectrum of
mercenary can be like a single person that decides to go
for brown shirts all the way up to black to
white shirts. So I'm just going to cross off some notes here. Interesting enough. So Scopuli, so it's confirmed that it's an OPA ship. Why does it have Mars Tech on it? Now, was this outlined in the episode?
Scopuli doesn't have Mars Tech.
They discovered Mars Tech in...
The beacon. The beacon,
you mean.
Was planted by...
Yeah, we see that. The Anubis crew plant the beacon.
To implicate Mars. That was done by Anubis.
So that's why they did... So they deliberately let the Knight get there and discover that. Then they destroyed the Canterbury.
Mm.
And let the Knight go. Well, yeah, they let the Knight go. They just ignored the Knight, really. But they left them as fake witnesses, almost.
They let them go because I can't quite get my finger on why, but something to do with, like, they wanted some witnesses to say...
Yeah, they wanted somebody to say the tech. Yeah, they wanted Holden to do... They wanted what Holden did to happen. Yeah. What Holden did, says, we found this Martian tech and everything's going to shit, basically. Yeah. So he sends out that message. Which is another reason why they don't jam their communications.
So the general consensus of what happens at the end is basically Jules Pierre Mau is putting everyone against each other so that him and his private, his private nation or his private system or his private company can kind of colonize the solar system, take over.
This is where we straight mouth it, because
so the big mystery that it leaves us with is what's Jules Pierre Mau's goal and rationale, right? Like, we obviously know he's on a first name basis with Avicerella.
No, he doesn't know Avicerella.
Oh no, he gets introduced.
It's the one
to
person he doesn't know out of that lot. It's Aaron Wright that he's with.
Yes,
and Aaron Wright. So we discover Aaron Wright's corrupt.
Yeah,
which we were beginning to suspect.
We should mention that Avicerella goes to De Graaff's house. Gets his magic pencils. Taps the magic pencils on an iPad and finds out that those ships weren't built by Earth in the sense of being built by anybody under UN control. And then
private contractors.
Jules-Pierre Mau comes in and I've lost the track. What does he do? What's the contract?
So the point is that, right, this I've got it written down as Aaron Wright's convenient report. That's what I've got. Aaron Wright's got this convenient report saying that they've been looking into this. You know, it's like suddenly he's got a report, even though he never mentioned it before. But he says convenient report, and what he discovers, is that private contractors have been building these ships. So these ships were made at the Bush Mill Dockyard or something, whatever it's called.
Bush something.
Yeah.
So they got Bush whatever dockyard, and they were made there, yes, but they weren't made for Earth. military. They were made for private ships. And every single one of them then went to Tycho Station.
Mm-hmm. And Avasarala either knows or strongly believes that not to be true. So she, that's the moment where she realizes Erin Wright is in on this. And she goes, and her reaction is basically, yeah, mate, that's like, yeah, that sounds legit. Yeah, sure.
So she plays her part there perfectly, mm-hmm. as she explains to her husband later.
Yeah. And Fred Johnston seems to anticipate this almost.
Yep, because, well, we were talking about this last episode. Hey, Damnable Reverend, hiya. Sorry, no music tonight. We're doing a special episode of Space Virgins. Space Virgins Live. We're talking about The Expanse, and we're talking about the last two episodes of Series 1. So we got it in the last episode we were talking about. Shit, I've lost my own thread now. What was I saying?
The engines, everything gone to Tycho, Avasarala talking to her husband, sending her husband away.
Fred Johnson.
That was it. It was Fred Johnson. All right. Oh, well, Damnable Reverend, it's series one we're talking about, so you're in luck. So, yeah, Fred Johnson, you were asking last episode, what is Fred Johnson's intention with all this information?
One of the possibilities you laid out was what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of your possible theories was exactly what happens. He gives the information away in the same way that Holden just, broadcasts wide the information about the.
I'm starting to like Fred Johnson. He seems to be kind of a nice chap.
He did murder all those civilians.
This is something
on episode five or six, whatever it was.
Yeah. Okay. So this is something that I've.
You got a theory now?
Not a theory, but like it's sort of addressing one of the themes of the show, which is like even if you've done something heinous, if like basically it questions like the like the philosophy of punishment, right? Mm. So it's like, why should someone be punished when they do something obviously heinous, right? Is it to deter other people from doing something similar? Is it to seek revenge and catharsis for a grievance against you? Is it for the protection of the innocent? Sorry, Hamish, what's the...
Damnable Reverend's just saying that one of his friends was an extra on the show.
It
was a belt loader on the show.
Ah, built a
excellent.
Oh, nice.
Sorry, yeah. Get a screenshot for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was thinking, it's like, if someone does something like what Fred Johnson does, but like he does it presumably under orders, but maybe not. It does, you know. But like,
Has it been made clear at this point? No.
Okay. Stop talking. I was waiting for that.
I'm kind of assuming that he is a consequence of the circumstances he was in, right? As in, if it had been someone else that wasn't Fred Johnson, maybe the same thing would have happened, right? But Fred Johnson obviously is legitimately remorseful for this, but remorseful insofar as he is no longer a threat to society, kind of remorseful, right?
That's fair enough.
Is punishment going to achieve any of the pre-listed goals?
I mean, I think we're all going to agree on like punishment is pointless. Protecting the public from somebody dangerous, you know, if you have to lock somebody away to do that, okay. But we shouldn't like punish.
Punitive punishment is pointless. Yeah,
like
punishment,
you know, yeah, spanky bottom, or you know, timeout step.
Not a spanky bum.
Yeah,
bum.
Yeah
like I got corporal punishment at school.
I was primary school.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah, and it was the leather belt in primary school.
Yeah, rather than being like it was painful, but it was more like a surreal experience. That's what.
Yeah, so out of body, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this real?
An adult who has responsibility over you is going to take you into a room and beat you and then release you. It's fucking bizarre.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, presumably...
The belt was done in front of everyone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. you were taken to travel class and humiliated extra. Then
is this the tears of corporal punishment sort of subsiding? Is that in front of the class, taken away to a room, and then got rid? You know,
yeah,
like sort of. I mean, it does seem kind of weird because you are basically in a very real way telling children that violence solves problems. You know,
very much so.
Yeah,
Interestingly, we both went to Catholic school, so there you go.
No, I didn't.
Oh, didn't you not go to Catholic school?
I went to a dirty normie school.
Did you? All right. Yeah. I thought you were going to say you went to a posh school or something instead.
No,
some crossover there. Back on track, sorry. The thing I'd say, about, I've brought this up when we've talked about Fred Johnson before, and I think it's worth reiterating just now, is when you're saying that he seems genuinely remorseful and all that, remember what I said about having sympathy and empathy for other military people as well.
Yeah.
So even though he's an earther...
Yeah,
he does seem to care about what happens to the remains of Lopez and stuff. Yeah. So he takes advantage to get the information chip out of his suit. But he does...
I mean, the question is, why didn't Holden do it? Like,
that does bother me. It's why didn't Holden
Think Holden didn't think. I mean, Holden had been through a lot at that point. He's got other things on
and
his
also,
mind.
And also, he doesn't. Well, no, he was military, so you
I think it's. It's believable to me that it just slipped his mind.
Given everything that's happening, that's believable.
And to be honest, I don't even think that's particularly sneaky on Johnson's part, because it's like, of course you would pat the body down before.
And he was also even in that meeting in the tube, he's always very upfront about his motives. He said you're going to be a pawn, but it's nothing wrong with being a pawn so long as you're on the right side. Like he wasn't. Yeah. He's not bullshitting them as to his intentions. He wants to use them to get a seat at the table, which is fair enough.
Yeah, he's pretty straightforward at this, as far as we can tell.
See, this is
what he says and does.
Because this is where the contrast between him and Avicerella are kind of interesting. Because
she's very underhanded.
See, this is the thing. Oh, I would say more also duplicitous. In fact, she explains her duplicity a little bit in this episode.
Yeah, and her husband, she says about it.
I think, you know what? I kind of like Fred Johnson's kind of diplomacy a little bit better, in the sense of, I'm going to be political, I'm going to be tactical.
But you couldn't. The situation Avicerella is in, if Fred Johnson was in her place playing it as Fred Johnson would, he'd just be killed.
Yeah, he'd just disappear.
Like,
have an accident.
Survive and do good, she's got to play that. She's a politician.
She's a politician. Yeah. Fred Johnson's a leader directly. A direct leader.
Yeah.
I think he's more hands-on. I suppose that's a way to put it.
I mean, to be honest, I suppose in some ways, de Graaff was a little bit like Fred Johnson in that he was very overt with his intentions and values.
Really?
Which is basically he loves Mars, and I think his dream is Mars and UN unity, right?
I don't think so. No, I think he just liked Mars personally, selfishly, wanted to live
in a sort of colonialist secular way. As far as I was concerned.
Like wanting to go and live in the south of France. Fred Johnson has an altruism, whereas de Graaff to me was just not in a particularly pronounced way, but just selfish, like a normal selfish.
In a basic selfish way.
I mean, that's a cynical way of looking at it. Not necessarily incorrect, but it could be the case that like he's a bit like, he votes, you know, Remain in the Brexit referendum because he has a house in the south of France that he'd likes to easily get to. But also like there is some I don't know if altruism is the right word, but some sincerity in wanting unity over separation and division.
I don't think he particularly cares about unity. I think he just cares about his own comfort.
He's a diplomat. That's kind of thing.
He reads. My problem, part of my problem with de Graaff is like his career. He's just career politician. He's just, you know, this is his job because this is his job, and he's worked his way up without having any particular skill. But like he's. To be good in that position, you've got to have a sophistication. And Avicerella plays him so fucking easily.
He's so
unsophisticated. His idiocy bothers me. It's part of it.
Like, I mean, just because you're a career politician doesn't mean you're void of ideology, though, right?
Little aside for anybody else that's only coming to this late, Chris hates this character. Drew hates this character for some reason. Absolutely hates this character.
He's only started hating it as part of this series now that he's analysed him a little bit.
No, I hated him the first time through.
Oh, really?
he, it just rubs me up the wrong way. And to be fair, and I promise this is not homophobia, his boyfriend fucking irritates the shit out of me as well.
His boyfriend... See, I think you've seen these actors in something else, because the guy that plays his partner...
Yeah.
Is also in other things where he annoyed me. he doesn't annoy me in this, but that actor has played characters that annoy me in other stuff.
I enjoy his performance, but when he says to Avasarala, Frank always said, it's hard to stay angry with that brat.
Yeah.
And then he goes, I'm not Frank. But yeah, have a look around the house. Yeah, it's cool. Like, you say that line, you kick somebody out. You don't go, but yeah, have a look around. It's cool.
It is a bit weird, that duality there. No, I don't think so. Stand up for something.
No, I think it's... I mean, this is what you might think of, Drew, as middle class, like, civility, right? Like, in terms of, like...
Well, then don't say the rude line, then. Because that was very rude.
But it was a very polite way of saying something very rude, right?
Which is very bourgeois. Which is very bourgeois.
Exactly. There you go. You're upsetting the proletariat.
Exactly. So it's very on theme with the dinner party that was tedious.
No, absolutely. I think all of that together is why I think it's theatrical.
Because the thing is, I think the vibe that it gives off, particularly the one that you received, Drew, is when like Democrats and Republicans like are actually friends outside of work type of
thing.
There's
something of that, and the inanity of it, and the fact that when you get behind it, like, they don't really care about anything. They're just out to line their own pockets.
This is what annoys me. We've had this discussion before in another episode of politicians, but generally, didn't we?
But with DeGraff's partner, it could also be the case of, you know, he hates Avasarala's guts for what she did, which in his mind is basically killing DeGraff, right? From his perspective, from his understanding, or driving him to suicide by using politics. Yeah. However, he also might sort of recognize, well, look, you know, DeGraff did love her, and, you know, that could be like, you know...
Yeah, no, to be a little bit kinder to him, he reads as a very gentle and kind person.
Yeah, he's not nasty. He's just sort of low-grade, selfish, and dull.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm talking about the boyfriend now. I can't remember.
Oh, you're talking about the boyfriend.
Yeah, like he's kind, he's gentle, but it's in that scene. It's the combination of the mean line and then look around, just be something. It's so
well. He's grieving as well, so he's got a complicated situation. Yeah, when the person he loves most in the world has just died. You know,
I will say. The situation of that house, the location and the views, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I do want to get to the aesthetics later on, actually, but let's leave that aside for a sort of
So that house is on, they call it the Yukon Archipelago.
Yeah.
So we get a first explicit global warming as a raise the sea levels kind of thing.
Yeah, well, because in the titles we see a bit of the global warming thing.
Yeah,
The bay at New York.
And when you see New York, yeah, it's got like
flood shrinks, and the Statue of Liberty is just basically the whole island is just now the central bit. Mm.
Do you think that we'll do flood walls for London, or we'll just let it go? When
didn't they have something?
They've got something.
As far as I'm concerned,
there's a. I know you hate the guy. Drew,
it's not the Londoners themselves. It's the billionaires and all their fake. Yeah, but there's a made-up value property. You know?
There's a Tom Scott video about the flood defences of the Thames. Mm. And it's got like four or five something like redundancies or something to that effect.
Yeah, well, the Thames Barrier, right?
Thames Flood Barrier, yeah, it's called, isn't it?
70s or 80s, and it was quite a feat of engineering. But then, of course, global warming comes along and renders it fairly irrelevant. You know, if sea levels rise, it's not going to cope with that.
So yeah, what do we do? Do we just let it go? Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of history there, isn't there? But
none of it interesting or good. It's not mercy.
Well.
Mercia had the first I think the first female ruling monarch in the history of Europe.
Queen something.
Queen woman, but that's royalty as well, so what you're doing
Yeah, come on.
But royalty of a like a fiefdom is different to royalty of a kingdom, right?
Somewhere deep down, the romance of that does call to us, if we're honest.
Yeah,
it depends, right? Like, if you've got smaller, like if you're on a first name, not on a first name basis, but if you know the people in charge, that's surely going to have a much more healthier dynamic than a king far away, right?
Yeah. No, for sure.
If you know,
an anarchist. I believe in hierarchy. You know, if somebody's a good leader and somebody is a good something else, then structure it like that. It's when they get too much power is the problem.
Yeah, or sometimes not enough power, like with the American system, and no one actually has any power.
No one has
any power. Yeah,
yeah, and it's all lawyers exploiting loopholes to make things work. Yeah.
Well, Congress has the power, but the problem is Congress is always 50-50 divided, pretty much, so you can't get anything big done.
And then vetoed by the president. Like anyone with any power, the only thing they have the power to do is start wars and stop things from happening. Like governors, their power is basically stopping things from happening. They can stop you can stop bad things from happening, but you can't make good things happen. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, you end up with a rotting circumstance, right? Mm-hmm. Where like a ratchet, where it's like, you know, the stop is you know, you can stop bad things from happening, but then.
It just slowly gets worse and worse and worse. This episode, quick sponsorship brought to you by the CCP, where we do things better.
We do things better, like solar panels.
We the CCP, I'm speaking on their behalf.
Oh, right. Okay. So, I'm going through my notes pretty quickly.
So, we're not sponsored by Big Moon anymore, then.
How did we. well, China for the moon.
Oh no! Don't start with Chinese again, Chris.
Okay.
We get it. You hate them.
Erin Wright, we find out. First of all, one thing I want to know about the technology.
Thank you,
right. So Avicerella was using literal. It seemed like actual pencils. Right. Like I've even got the type of pencils.
Wrecked his desk with the excitement of stationery there.
Right. So it's like so you can see here you've got the graphite in the middle.
Paul's,
you have an iPad to touch.
Hang
down.
On a second, because Paul's made a good point about power. Power's like manure, spread it around and it makes things grow. Put it in one place and you just have a pile of shit.
Yeah.
Very apt.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can grow mushrooms out of a pile of shit.
Oh, see, Chris is such a bloody diplomat.
Always the
Chris, you know what's going to happen? Drew's going to start hating you because you're going to be just like the
No, I'm going to trick you into giving our secrets to Mars and then have you.
So I kind of wondered
pencils,
whether or not this is some kind of like nod to either science fiction or science, where like where you can store data in graphite.
That's
like,
It's not in graphite, but there is a Wacom, or it might be discontinued now, but there was a Wacom drawing thing where...
Oh, yeah, it was just a pen, wasn't it? There was no other bit. Yeah.
And you could do sketches with the pen, and you had the sketch, but it also saved the sketch in the pen, and you could have the digital version of the sketch.
And
from
if you
the
notice
pen.
On the notes and everything they had, there were handwritten notes.
Yeah. So I think it's
handwritten storage as well
cool.
as...
I like that as an idea. It's a very cool idea.
Yeah.
Chris,
you got
Chris,
a picture
right?
of it to put in the background? Is that what you're going to do?
What,
you've not done that today yet?
I haven't done that today.
I'm excited.
Okay, hang on. Was that in episode one or episode two? We're blending them together. Oh, wow. Actually, this
episode. Oh, hang on.
It's all one.
Yeah, it's all one for some people, yeah. I can't remember. <That's> the answer. I'm going to say one based on my notes that Earthships Martian tech thing. So.
This is the apartment.
That's... Yeah. All right. Well, since we've got this picture, can I note something about the color in this episode?
Yeah.
Because we were talking. Chris pointed out last time about color schemes and things.
Black and white.
Yeah. Well, exactly. She is wearing. Now, I didn't realize that at first, and I don't think you do realize. I don't think you see it until afterwards. But she's wearing black to go and visit a widower, essentially.
Mm.
Right? That's why I assume she's wearing a black coat. But underneath, she's still got a red sari or whatever it is on which I didn't notice at first. So it's interesting.
She
walks through the snow a bit like the other episode, but she's in black instead of red this time.
And the obviously the white and black contrast is nice, makes for a nice, and the colors, yeah, the color grading in this scene are like very cold, very brought down.
Yeah. And when you're on Eros, everything's kind of gray almost. Everything, no matter what the color is, everything's gray.
Oh, yeah. They use color to communicate.
But they do that a lot with the belter areas anyway, and sometimes with the ships, depending on what the ship is.
Has she been referred to? I think she mentions at some point that she's referred to as the snake in Asari. I think it might be later. It's not a spoiler. But I love that. Snake in Asari is a cool epithet.
She seems quite happy with it as well.
So. But yeah, no, I was querying whether or not you can, whether or not it's possible to store.
I think I know what you were getting at. You were getting at the graphite being a storable medium. Yeah.
So
I mean, I don't know whether that's a pencil. Like, does that wear down like our pencils, or is it really like a tech pencil that's just made to look like a traditional pencil?
Yeah, I think it's made to look like it because it's got.
But then, if it's made to look like, why does he have so many of them?
He's got three.
Because maybe, like that's the thing.
Well, I was going to say, French Ghosty points out some companies still do it with special notebooks and special pens. The problem is the notebooks are very expensive. Yeah, that's the problem with making a techie pen and notebook is you lose one bit or break one bit, and you've got a problem there.
Hamish, do you remember those terrible pen scanners in the 90s where you were supposed to like scan line of text?
Oh, God, one line at a time. I mean, my first scanner was one of those little hand ones as well. You had to hold it, and you had to keep it in a straight line, and you had to move it at a certain speed.
And you had to go that way, and then you had to match it up the other way. You know,
but one of those to an art student, and you've got a ton of fun. We used to get out of those.
I still use them for editing.
There's one time when I was in art college where one of my friends tried to photocopy a tree and broke the photocopier, just crushed the photocopier.
What, photocopy a tree?
Yeah, it's art.
Are you saying you put a whole
art
tree?
Or digital art?
I mean, I guess analog, so he cut down a tree, brought it back in a truck, dragged it into the art thingy, put it on top of the glass smash.
So he was trying to photocopy a section of a tree then?
It was a tree.
There you go. Andrew says she had a lot of fun wobbling things around on a flatbed scanner. But you can do that while it's actually in scanning. I mean, I've got one. I've still got one.
Cover open and people look.
Do you know, actually, one time, in the early days of when profile pictures were just starting to be a thing, I didn't have a digital camera, so I stuck my head under a scanner.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it kind of came out a bit like it was a bit surreal and a bit
On a similar subject, right? This printer I've got is from when I had my shop, so it's quite a big fancy thing. It's a printer, scanner, fax machine, the whole business. Yeah. It's got some cool features, right? Slight aside about my printer, but one thing is, for example, it takes memory cards, right? So you can put an SD card full of pictures in. You can then print off a set of thumbnails on a single sheet of paper, and then each thumbnail has a little tick box next to it. You mark the tick box, put it back in the scanner, scan it again, and it prints out in full the ones you've selected. So
that's
it's pretty cool. But that's not what I was going to say, though. That was just an aside. The other thing was about the scanning it. Is at that time they were starting to say that color printers and color scanners and color photocopiers, they were worried about forgeries. So we tried putting a fiver in it just to see if it came out, and it came out fine. It did, because some of them will, like, for some reason, there's something in it that it detects, and it just goes all funny. I had like a perfectly well photo, high res digital £5 note, you know.
That's the worst crime you've ever committed.
No, probably not.
You couldn't do that nowadays, because if I remember correctly, we've got plastic money, which you might not know, Drew, being...
No, I've touched it. They were like, try and tear it, and I tried to tear it and couldn't tear it.
Yeah, like it's got, and we've got little windows in it there.
With a background thing, that's gone quite funny. We keep showing off a £10 brown beer token, as we used to call them.
And here's one for the other side, so you
Chris, hold it still. I want a screenshot so I can print that out.
Yeah, you got to print
that. The other side, both sides there.
Who's that? Is that some old monarch?
Victoria, Queen Victoria, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or Jane Austen, maybe?
No, Jane Austen was somebody talented.
Oh, Diana. Lady Di, that's it.
Again.
Lady Di. Oh, God, if she was still around, the world would not be in such a state, right?
You're working for the Daily Express now.
if only Diana was here. I'm a spliff in honour of Diana.
So what were we talking about, scanners? For? Oh, yeah, because we're talking about the pencil. Here's my take on this pencil in the show, not real life. But in the show, I see it as it's shaped like a pencil, but it writes into data. That's the way I see it.
And it also writes on the paper. Presumably, auto also writes on the paper.
I'm not sure. I don't know if you... Do you see
it? It'd be a bit weird if it didn't.
Yeah,
I don't expect it to be a spy thing as much as a tech thing that people know about.
I think it's a tech thing.
I don't think it's meant to be subterfuge.
See, I think because this is like a posh middle class thing of like real books and stuff like that, right? It could be like how people use like fountain pens nowadays, like me, when really you could just use a biro or something else. Oh my God, mechanical we have the same pencil. Color as well.
You've already discussed this before. Yeah. You winded me up, Chris.
But it's like, so basically it's like, it looks and feels like a normal pencil. You write it down on a piece of paper like an old-fashioned person, but then all of the information that you're writing down gets stored in the pencil, so you discard the paper.
I think that's
I'll go with that. But I'm using a mechanical pencil, so you know.
That is nerdy.
I've got a couple of them. This is a 0.7 mil, and I've got a 0.5 mil. Just out of interest for the British audience, more than anything. This is the company, and you know how you get these Far Eastern Chinese company names that they just make up? Mm-hmm. This one's brilliant, and I think I've shown it to you and Chris before, Drew. If it'll focus. Come on.
Four camels. Four candles.
Four candles.
Well, it's not actually. That's what it looks candies. Like.
Four candies.
Four candies.
Sour
yeah,
candies.
Yeah, there you go.
Four candies.
Four candies, but it looks like four candles, which is brilliant. I think I don't know how they came up with the name, but you know how these fake company names are like. It's brilliant, and I think
Chris, mm-hmm. Ask me your fountain pen.
Oh, this one, okay. Yeah. Oh, hang on a minute.
You've both got one at the same time. It's illusions.
Oh, a little bit of magic.
Paul says use a quill and ink like any good hipster. I remember when I was a kid.
Oh, a hipster is going to use a clay tablet, cuneiform.
Yeah, cuneiform. I remember when I was a kid, I had a fountain pen that some, you know, well-meaning older person had given me. And it was one that you refilled yourself, you know, it was one of the things. And I had a bottle of ink, and my mum was always like, be careful with that ink, be careful. Of course, I spilled the entire bottle of ink all over the carpet.
I'm going to say, though, fountain pens, I think, are still thought of as less convenient, but... They're more reliable. Like they write, but like this is more reliable than any like ballpoint or you know, Bic or one of Lamy. Lamy Safari.
They're wonderful. They're very cost. Like I'd want to say cost effective because like they're cheap.
Of big fountain pen.
I mean that one I'll admit to. Like if Lamy want to do like you know want to send us totally.
Well, like, they could send me a pen because I don't even have one.
Yeah, like I know, I like me and Drew come across as being very like anti-capitalism in a lot of what we do. But
Drew does.
I have certain companies though that we're human. You know, we're like I love a McDonald's.
Yeah, I like my Lucy and Yak wallet. So if you're about, they do. This is a corduroy wallet that turns invisible. It's a stealth wallet. literal brown corduroy wallet. Like this is just like.
Speaking of, while we're on the subject of things disappearing and magic and so forth, in that it's jumping ahead a bit, but that bit when Alex does the little trick for the little kid, what is that supposed to be? I don't understand the trick or what he's doing. I don't understand what he's doing.
Does he make a mistake, or is the joke that he drops it? That's what I can't work out.
The only reading that makes sense to me is the joke is that he fucks the trick up and he drops it.
Yeah, that's all I could think of. But it doesn't
it's
seem
too convincing for that to be funny. Like it actually looks like he fucked it up, and then it would be. It's not funny. Then it's just like, oh, that's a bit pathetic.
But then
is that supposed to be what?
Well, it's part of it that he's out of touch with children. because he hasn't seen his kid for a long, long time. And also, while we're on this subject and we're actually talking about the show again, Naomi's obviously very protective of that child as well. That other, not same child, same child.
You get a little, another little Amos bit where
he's
look
after the kid. Yeah,
you fucking look at, and a look that says, "If you don't, I'll rip your fucking head off."
There's a lot of good Amos lines in this episode as well. On these episodes.
Yeah. Also, throwback to a second ago. This is actually a Lamy mechanical pencil.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, they make.
Well, mine's really nice. Just cheapy knockoff four candies.
Four candies.
But yeah, no, that's going to show up as well. But you know, it's the pencils and the eraser are all four candies.
Yeah, I got it back on track, and you're both just immediately.
I know,
it back.
Derailed it again. Sorry. Right, but the point.
How am I the responsible one? What the fuck is
what's
happening?
Gone? Oh, we know we're in trouble.
Okay,
now.
All right, I've got.
No,
I've
I was going to say one more thing about the pencils. What you, I think, what Chris was trying to get to, and hopefully I've not misunderstood him here, was that you were thinking because it's graphite that somehow you could use that to store data.
Yeah.
Is that the point? Yeah.
I don't know whether or not it's effective, or maybe it's like a way of hiding it or something. I don't know. That could be complete, like, made up non-science, but
this show.
So Erin Wright, who looks very evil. Now, is he the one that's above Avicerella but below?
Yes.
He's the undersecretary to the United Nations. Avicerella is the deputy undersecretary.
Right, okay.
And I don't think you've seen in this series yet is the secretary general, is the boss.
We'll just call him the UN king or something.
King of the UN.
Or
king
the general secretary of the UN, like the we do Earth normally.
And,
like
and
now.
Never mentioned
king
the moon.
Of, king of Earth. we don't know how. It is confirmed that Erin Wright just basically got him killed, right? Like, this isn't suicide.
Got who killed?
De Graaf.
Oh, is it?
I think it's confirmed. I think that's what Avicerella thinks.
Right.
Yeah, because I was... I think it was last time we did this. I was like, De Graaf killed himself? Or did he? And then you were like, oh, he killed himself. He killed himself.
Yeah, Drew did actually mention that before you came along tonight when we were getting ready. And he said, were you trying to double, you know, to sort of deflect Chris? And I said, no, I've just been stupid. I forgot completely about that coming up again as one of the details. I remembered all the stuff about the pencil and the ship details and everything. But
I assume the reason Erin Wright hasn't...
Sorry, on you go. Sorry? I was just going to say another thing from the house when she's at the house. Isn't there blood on the desk?
Is there blood?
Oh, because it's presumably he shot himself.
Yeah,
or something.
It was just a glimpse, but I'm sure there was blood on the desk. Just double check if you want, Chris. You're the video expert here.
I'll have a scan through. It's in the first half, I think, of the episode. If I
it's just
correctly.
As she sits down at the desk, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, which will be in the first. It's definitely episode 9.
Yeah. Yeah, she's.
It's interesting that she gets luck. I mean, it's very lucky for Avicerella, really, that she gets the real information herself, just as Fred Johnson's thing happens and Erin Wright's reaction to it is all put into place as well. And she has a position in which to pivot and play the part of the dumb. You know, person. You know, the what does she call herself? The
stubborn old lady.
Stubborn old lady, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going a bit blurry, Chris. Do you want to wave at your camera?
That's all right. I can. I'm about to supercharge us with some new technology.
Oh.
Okay. So this. hang on a minute. If I fuck with the lights, sometimes it.
Yeah. See what I mean? Yeah. That's blood on his table, isn't it? On his desk.
Yeah. Oh, it really is trying to.
Which is weird because why didn't his husband or partner? I can't remember if it's his husband or not, but why didn't his partner clean that up?
Yeah, so maybe you just couldn't bring yourself to it.
Yeah,
that
maybe
point.
He's not got that.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's why the desk is still untouched and Avicerella gets into his goodies.
I'll tell you what, if I do this. Does it right? Turn it off and on again.
There you go. Beautiful. So it's presumably amazing. Erin Wright. If you did have De Graaf killed, the reason is because of the information he had, right?
Yeah, but he didn't get the information.
You would think the team that went in to kill him would also get the information. But I guess so maybe then
this sort of comes back to maybe the pencils are a little bit spy-y then and a bit more underhand than we thought.
She looks through.
Maybe like he just gives the impression that he's kind of old school and writes things with a real pencil.
Or like pseudo old school, I guess, in this.
Sort of hipster old school.
Hipster old school.
Like people that have got fountain pens at home, you know.
Abisarella knows him quite well, right? So maybe she just knows something that other people don't know about where he keeps his pencils that he keeps.
In the drawer of his desk. That's where somebody would look.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the scene now, and basically she pulls up a drawer where there's like SD cards there, and she doesn't even look through them. She's like, no, this isn't what I'm looking for. And then she just opens a drawer, pulls out three pencils. Two of which are dead anyway, and then stashes them in her pocket.
So she knows what she was going for. So maybe that is knowing him. But then why wouldn't they have taken the SD card? You know, they'd made the data card.
I think the reason for that is because then something is obviously missing.
That's true.
Then, and that gives you a clue that...
Yeah, they didn't have orders to kill their husband or whatever, so that would, you know, that they wanted to make it look thing. Andrew says, this episode is about pencils then. Yes, that's exactly what this... It's a 90-minute episode about pencils.
Pencils came up earlier as well, weirdly.
Yeah, we were talking... What episode? Games. Oh, that was when we were playing... when Chris was playing DSX, yeah. We were talking about War Games. And I don't know why that... I can't remember why, but you'll see if you watch our other videos. Watch the DSX video about this. And
we that were... is cross-promotion.
Cross-promotion, there we go. I sort of hit trivia question, hit the guys with what was the password? Well, we've kind of said that, what was the password that was the password of the day at the school in War Games? And of course, Drew got it right away.
Is Julie Mao coming back?
In what way? How? What do you mean?
In any way, because it's like you mentioned earlier that, and obviously it was very apparent to us that Adam Jensen, his likeness was absorbed by the blue goo.
Well, the crew of the Anubis was absorbed into the Anubis engine.
It's like a force ghost or something. I mean, as far as we said, like...
You're the force, Miller.
It was a mimicry rather than like they didn't create.
Yeah, the light sort of becomes a sort of shape of him. So,
yeah, but it learns and grows, it might. I don't know. It might be able to engage in some sort of psychological warfare with people. You know, maybe it's not because the thing is, one of the things. Sorry, I'm going to just move the mic a little bit. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. No noise. All good.
All right, because when I pulled it down last time, you were like,
No. It made that very bassy, the springs, you know, the doing.
Oh, yeah. I had headphones on, Drew didn't.
I love that sound. Give me more.
I don't mind if I don't have headphones on, to be honest.
Yeah, so totally, because people were talking about those that had seen the proto-molecule.
Proto-molecule, don't forget that word, proto-molecule, because we know we can use it at last. We've been trying not to call it that for, like, the past 2 months or whatever.
So everyone who talks about it and knows anything about it or observes anything about it, they say this isn't, like, any bioweapon I've known before. Mm. Obviously, it sounds like that there's moratorium or an embargo on bioweapons in general, right? Is that just against international/interplanetary law?
I don't know if that might be the case, or it might just be a normal, you know, a normal humane person's reaction to seeing it. You'd be that, oh, that's beyond the fucking pale for it.
Am I right in thinking that bioweapons are against international law? They got to be.
Yeah.
As is white phosphorus.
I mean, it doesn't stop
the still being used by.
Doesn't stop the
CIA.
At least
two forces.
Yeah.
And also, to be fair, if you're a private corporation, you know, like international law,
private corporations have got a lot more to lose than a government in a way, because they can lose money.
Yeah, I suppose so, really, isn't it? Yeah.
No, but I think you're right. I enjoyed the little thing. Yeah.
I think the idea is that it's, yeah, these are horrific by any standards.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you going to do? Sue us and lose all the tax that we give you?
Yeah, yeah. So it's
what
so
tax?
The
they don't pay tax. That's the problem with all these circular arguments about capitalism. Well,
is Luna a tax haven?
We could pay you in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're paying tax to the politicians who let them off for everything.
Yeah, yeah, campaign donations then.
But it's a lot less than what they would pay if they actually paid tax, you know? Benefited the society that they're sapping the life out of. Anyway, listen.
So, anyway, they've got... Yeah, I don't know how much of a tax haven Luna is, but, I mean, I'm going to suspect quite a lot. It could be the island to the British Isles, right? Or the Great Britain, sorry. You know, like
I don't think we fully explore that. Maybe in the books there's a bit more, actually. That's why that's one of the things I've been a bit wary of, that I'm maybe remembering a few things from the books, especially now that we're at the end of the series, and I'm thinking, I think that some of the stuff I thought of wasn't fully fleshed out in the show, and there's a few little differences and stuff, but it's not massive.
Yeah. So people look at the destructive protomolecule and they think bioweapon.
Mm. Well, given that it attacks people, but also in a way it attacks the ship. It attacks the Anubis. Pardon me.
The core, like the center of.
But then again, we've got the idea that that's just how it feeds. It feeds on energy, electromagnetic energy.
Or I mean,
but it definitely reaches. In the previous episode, it definitely reaches out when it's energized by the engine being turned on. Mm. It reaches out for Holden. Tentacles reach out.
It could,
and obviously it does to Kenzo at the end of the episode. It's like,
it could feast on organic matter. It could fight all chemical energy. It might chew up batteries. Don't try that at home.
unless you are made of protomolecule, in which case, feel free.
Yeah, but it seems more logical, judging from Adam Jensen's demise. That there's more to it. Like it gains information from people.
Yeah.
The scientist
dude does say Dresden. It does say imply it's learning, right?
Yep, he does say it. It says learning is the word he uses. Yeah.
I mean, if I want to throw throw logic to the wind and just go on vibes, I would sort of possibly predict or think that this protomolecule is a sentient goo. And maybe it was started as a weapon, but it absorbs all these people, and it's like, actually, I don't want to be a bioweapon anymore. I want to be a ballet dancer or something.
Sentient goo, like in the 50s film The Blob.
I thought you were going to say it's like Odo from Deep Space.
Right.
Although that doesn't have any sort of bioweapon properties, it's just
an annoying he's an annoying fascist blob, though.
Mm. I mean, this blob just wants to be,
loved.
Loved. It's
like this blob.
I mean, we know from RPGs that blobs and slimes are they're the level one enemy. They're the weakest enemy. So,
some of them are a bit higher.
Yeah, no, they're level one. They start off as a level one enemy, but then they blob up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And also, that's the thing, is like they've basically got a whole space station of Eros with all of the people involved. So are they just basically getting this blue blob to feed on as many people as possible to see how much it learns, how big it gets? Is this the biggest Petri dish that they're going for?
That's one of the things they describe it as. Miller says that's a Petri dish with 100,000 people in it.
Yeah, because I'm guessing...
Andrew's given us a helpful little guide there. Ooze to slime to blob? You could put a picture of the protomolecule up in the background.
We could. That's what kind of scene do we want?
One of the ones where it's towards the very end, where it's like all over the station and stuff.
I'm gonna go for quick. Yeah.
Okay. Space
piss. So they're basically like I'm assuming at this point now. Because Eros is like, it's like a self-contained environment, right? So the blue blob can presumably take over Eros without risk of it spreading beyond that.
Well, from as far as we know, it has been contained to the ship it was on, and then contained to Eros, as far as we know. Although there might be some... Well, I'll wait for Drew to come back to explore that, because we're getting back to the Julie seeing Miller and Miller seeing Julie thing.
Okay. So
No. I'm not saying anything. I'll wait for Drew to come back. He's better at the diplomacy and the poker facing about this. Because I always give you the wrong impression one way or the other, so...
Okay.
Wait till he's had his space piss, and then we'll talk about that.
All right. Anyway, this
there
is
you
the
go, proton molecule. Yeah, it's sort of little blue lights and goo and black stuff, and it gets into people's blood and all sorts.
Oh dear.
Cheeseness. Hello, Cheeseness. Yeah, hey, we've encountered the blue blob. Yes. Cheeseness, do you know the show at all? Cheeseness is here. Yeah. It's a man I want to speak to, actually.
we've encountered the blue blob.
Oh, Chris is. he's playing with his legs.
I tried to do the blue, but if I do the blue, I just.
That's excellent. Then you can show us the background more easily.
I can see. It is magic.
Paul Daniels was South African.
Wow, he was a man of many mysteries, wasn't he? The protomolecule. Yeah, like. It could exist within the mind, like it could. It could be a psychological component.
Did you hear that bit, Drew? You'd just gone for a space piss, and we were talking about Julie seeing Miller and the bird, and Miller seeing Julie.
Yes,
and the protomolecule
happening there.
Yeah,
Julie sees Miller. Not literally, she doesn't see him come through the door, but in some sense, she is aware of his presence. There's a connection between these two.
Okay, yeah.
Is Miller entirely being, you know, obsessive. Just obsessed and weep for, you know, is this part of his motivation is what we have to ask ourselves by this point.
She sees him with the bird.
With the bird as well, which is important.
It's such a distinct marker of, here's the right path, here's your destiny, here's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting because both of you have talked about, like, Miller's destiny, which... is a word that I don't know if you've ever used.
Dawes uses it.
Yeah, but Dawes is Dawes. You know, I mean.
Well, we're watching a show, and one of the things that features in it is Dawes and his relationship with Miller. So you know.
It's not a word that you typically use either of you, because it's kind of pseudo-religious of sorts, or it has
but spiritual.
It has very. It has very airy fairy connotations, right?
Okay.
Metaphysical, I guess.
Metaphysical.
You're right to say that. That's definitely not a word I would normally use. Yeah.
It's not. You. Yeah. So. So it could be the case that. I dropped my Lamy Safari fountain pen.
Sponsored by.
There we go.
We're in the pocket of big fountain pen.
Look at that, it's camouflage. So there is... I've lost my train of thought. Sentient gas, sentient goo.
Spiritual.
It's like, yeah, so...
Destiny.
Yeah, like...
destiny. Miller's destiny.
Miller's destiny. So is it... I mean, could he even... I'm guessing he.
We have to probably have to get our poker faces ready here, Drew.
Yeah, like he's unlikely to already have been infected by it, because that tends to have a pretty severe trajectory. Like even the woman in the
Anubis,
she was like coughing to obviously indicate that she'd caught something, Miller, as I understand it, didn't experience any of those kind of symptoms. There's nothing for us to say.
Miller was always ill anyway. He just didn't look after himself.
Yeah, I suppose. But he wasn't coughing or...
Did a bit, to be honest. But that's not... I'm not trying to put you down a wrong path here. Okay. No, but I'll agree with you to that extent. He doesn't... Other than, living on alcohol and... stuff.
Yeah. But I mean he was quite close to Julie, but they said it wasn't airborne. But I don't know if he touched her, but James Holden said don't touch her because she might be contagious. So I'm assuming that they
The scientist says it's not airborne.
It says he's not airborne. If it's wet, don't touch it, is what he says.
But the metaphysical stuff happens before Miller comes in contact with.
Because remember, we've already had this.
But could it happen in the past? Or could it change your memories? Or could it either has sort of retconned something in his brain, which would be a really cool way of storytelling, which is something happens, but actually it turns out you think something else happened, but something just fucked with your memories. But I'm guessing this is not what it's doing. But is it somehow controlling Miller's destiny? I don't know. You know, like maybe, maybe not. There's no way to know.
I mean, I'm not at this point. You've got enough information to have an opinion about that, and I will say that's what I believe. So. Just, keep that in mind.
When you say that's what you believe, is that what you believe when you watch this show for the first time? Or is that...
No.
See, this is the danger, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so there is a cycle...
You've kind of arrived there. It's not some... I better not say that, but yeah, go on.
So it does seem like there's some sort of... I don't know. I'm going to say psychological component to the blue goo, but it could be something a bit more metaphysical, or it could be something a little bit.
Oh, I've lost the chat.
I believe there's something metaphysical going on.
Oh, there's loads of mist.
I'll be kind of pretty upfront about that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, there is obviously like the Miller and the bird scene is one of the few scenes, if the only one, where it's outright, it's all metaphor.
Yeah.
Like there's no text, is only subtext. Oh no, that's not, well, you know what I mean by that.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It's very much not literal.
We're
seeing what Julie is hallucinating or foreseeing or whatever. Yeah. Something.
Yeah. For want of, anything less.
And Miller sees Amos and says something about, it's beautiful or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then Holden looks down, and it's just Amos going, "You two look like shit."
Oh, yeah. It's an explicit Star Wars reference. That's the bit I was on about last time.
Was it?
That's they mentioned this in Ty and the whatever.
Ty and that guy.
Yeah. It's a bit in Empire when Luke has fallen out of the space toilet at the Bespin, and the Millennium Falcon comes along, and the
But also, I've got this. Hang on. Also, in one of my notes, Miller falls onto the airlock, which is also an echo of what's happened twice in series already.
Yeah.
He's fallen onto the airlock. What do you mean, twice in series?
On series, the station where he's from. He gets pushed into the airlock by bad guys twice.
Oh, yes.
So that thing where he falls into the airlock as they're sort of clambering along ill.
In the lift, Miller asks Holden, what does rain taste like? So Miller, it keeps the rain off your head.
And there's also that little bit where there's some drips coming from the ceiling and Miller sort of stops and he's not got his head. He feels it on his head and he's looking up.
I love that bit. Uh-huh. I love that. And again, it goes uncommented. It's not, he doesn't look up and go, that's like rain, you know. There's something going on with Miller being fascinated with, because they're all like in the last episode, Naomi looking at the sunset picture. They've never been on a planet. It's a planet to them is almost like folklore to us, something that we hear, you know, in the ancient past these things were the case.
So this scene, hang on a minute, there we go.
Is very much Lando Calrissian coming up to bring Luke into the airlock.
I was thinking of something, because the framing of this was really curious to me, because it's like he pops up in almost comedic style.
Well, it is a little bit of a funny moment, isn't it? Because Miller's looking down and seeing a vision of Julie Mao, and he goes, "Oh, it's beautiful." And then Holden sort of pops his head over the, pops his head over the top, and it's just, you know, it's just Amos.
It's a surprisingly funny scene for a scene where two people are dying of radiation poisoning.
Yes, yeah. Yes, it's probably the funniest two people dying of radiation poisoning that I've ever seen.
Because I
think, and then he says the line, you know, yeah, you two look like shit.
Is that not a throwback to something else? You look like shit. Is that not a famous...
Lots of things have that in it, don't they?
Yeah, but I assume that there was like a genesis for that line. But okay, never mind.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
The scene I thought was the Star Wars theme from this was, and its framing was a little bit like this, was actually in Return of the Jedi, where Chewbacca is in the in the walking big robot. Not, is it the AT-AT?
AT-ST.
AT-ST, where it's like...
Nerd.
You think it's just in terms of the bait and switch, where it's like you think it's one thing and then it's another, and this. But I think... But you're obviously right that it's the circular doors from the...
I mean, I only know that because they literally said that on the... Like, it is a straight-up, you know... Rip-off isn't the right word, but you know, it's an homage.
Homage.
Yeah.
A rip-off also, that they know they're doing is an homage.
One thing that I thought was interesting was, of course,
I'm sorry, it's a toss-up between the radiation dying scene and the scene at the end of Star Trek 2, which is hilarious.
The Spock's got... Yeah, it's not hilarious about the Spock one, but yeah.
So where they're flying away from the docks, flying away from Eros, Alex is like, sod it, we'll just power through.
I think it's like, fuck this gas hauler shit or something like that.
Gets rid of all the extra disguise stuff and everything.
But that's like, why don't more minute, like, it makes sense for the thing that, like, the handles, you know, the handles.
Docking clamps.
The docking clamps, yeah. It makes sense, specifically for a military ship. Space handles.
Space handles, of course.
It makes sense if the space handles, on a military ship, the things that the space handles hold on to be removable from the ship's side so that you can escape in the event of space clamps trying to hold you back, right?
I think they're more concerned with like something like, well, what they're pretending this is, like a radiation leak or an outbreak or something.
Yeah, the ship explodes in the docks and they pretend the it's radiation from that.
Where you really don't want people leaving. Like, you don't want people to be able to like break free kind of thing, like for, you know, health and safety.
See, here's the thing, right? With health and safety, it works the other way around, though. Even in a movie theater, you've got like the fire escape doors.
The movie theater isn't... Like, if they quarantined a city, like, they would have walls and armed guards preventing anybody from leaving, right? They would shoot people if they tried to leave, kind of thing. Like it's more that kind of situation is why you wouldn't want docking clamps that have a fail-safe.
I can see it from both ways.
I agree with
what Drew's saying is why, in this instance, that's what it's for. Mm. But also... Yeah, you want to be able to override that and get away if you have to. If there's some sort of emergency where the dock,
emergency barricades.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, where the dock master has been killed and the technology has been destroyed in some sort of incident or whatever, you want to still be able to get away.
Yeah, because it's up to the other.
That could be the only way people could escape the station.
They're kind of mutually exclusive, and you've got to pick one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is just weird, not necessarily for this particular incident, but in general.
Cheesness says here, think about a submarine. They don't have bulkheads that force open by default in the event of an emergency.
Makes sense. Well, obviously with the airlocks, they would be shut on default. And then
to be fair, submarines do have an escape hatch. Like if the submarine sinks, they have an escape hatch and you know... You're probably going to die, but you know you release the air from your lungs slowly as you go up and blah blah blah. That's the idea.
And you get ejector seats in fighter jets.
Yeah, but they're not underwater or in space.
Yeah,
they not.
Actually, I need to remind Chris this isn't really in space.
It isn't.
No.
How do they do the zero G?
Yeah, zero G, Hamish. You fucking idiot.
Yeah. Sorry, you're right.
Not a zero G on it. That hair. You can't do that hair.
I know.
That
looks like a shampoo advert, doesn't it? That bit.
Yeah. Also, I quite like that the there's a hospice mode on their med bots, and it's like I know that was also another one of a bit of a comedy moment. I don't even know if that was Amos just being a bit of a joker, but it's like
I think that's literally true.
So you've got this like med bot on your arm or whatever that's like dosing you up with what you need to, and it's like, oh, okay, I've done all I can do. I'm putting you into hospice. Yeah. It's like, goodbye. We're going to set you to sleep now. It's like, what? No, like, override.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, don't get me wrong, I can understand there being a hospice mode for like lethal injuries, and it sends you, you know, it just like doses you up on morphine and sends you off, you know, softly into the night. But like, what? Like, you don't want a machine that's quick to do that, right?
Like, it's decided. These guys are fucked. Never mind.
That's a deep paper cut. I best put you into hospital.
Well, that's the worry, isn't it? That's the worry about leaving the machine to decide.
I've got a very brief paper cut story.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's going to be painful.
My ex's father was licking envelopes and somehow managed to paper cut his eyeball.
What?
Was that? That's a Halloween story for you, isn't it? Oh, we're not Halloween anymore. It's like Halloween.
Uchan and Baloo.
Jesus, that's a military ship's med bot. It is actually, yes. Put them under till we get back to base, where they can be buried.
That's why Lopez would still be with us if it wasn't for shit like that. That's the thing that.
Well, they didn't even put him in the med chair, did they?
Yeah, no, he died. He died while they were escaping, so they were still. Yeah.
I'm assuming
they weren't able to apply anything like that. They just had to get in the chairs, strap in, and zap off.
Oh, I don't know. They really
eyeball paper cut sounds comfortable. Does he mean that uncomfortable?
Is that a spell check error?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
or just sarcasm.
Or eyeball paper cut might be a name for a band.
Oh, that's a punk band name, isn't it? One of the famous eyeball cut is on Shan Andalou, the Dali film, right?
Even an arty reference.
Yeah.
True story, right? One time I was sending a text message to my editor, and I can't remember what the sign off was, but autocorrect corrected it to dick.
That's another thing I didn't note down, but I noted that Miller calls Holden a dick at one point in this. Yeah, he says, "You told him to leave without you." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Dick." He just says it. It's like, excellent.
May I talk about the sort of little mini standoff between Adam Jensen and Commander Shepard?
That's Kenzo and...
Commander Shepard and Adam Jensen. Yeah. I think
see, I don't entirely get these references, that's why it annoys me.
Holden and Kenzo.
It's Holden and Kenzo, is it?
When Kenzo's basically
he's
begging to be taken with him, and we really get to the bottom of Kenzo's character there because Holden gives him an opportunity. He's basically saying, "Say something sincere to me."
Yes, yes.
And Kenzo is incapable of saying something.
Yeah,
sincere.
He just says something sort of pat. And...
So used to manipulating people, that he literally is incapable of being sincere. And I think that's a beautiful scene.
Yeah, that's why even Holden, who's pretty merciful, let's be honest, he's
really
merciful.
Not having the best day at that point.
Yeah,
so he's probably
he's not very happy.
And it was actually like he emptied a clip deliberately, not away.
Yeah, why didn't Kenzo just come back once the clip was empty?
Click, click, click. Oh,
well,
no,
if he did, of course, Miller would have just shot him from behind.
But then I think that's a little bit... I don't want to like be a Kenzo defender, right? But like, why would Kenzo know anything good about James Holden? Like,
well, don't say you're a good man, then. That's the problem. He's trying to bottle him up, but
he doesn't have any...
What he should be saying in that situation, if he doesn't know anything about him, is, please fucking take me. I'm terrified. I'm scared.
Yeah, just be honest, yeah.
Please take me with you.
And that's what he gave him the chance to do, to be honest and sincere for a moment. Because, I mean, what he did was... I mean, he essentially, at the end of episode 8... betrayed Holden, who had protected him from Amos. And Amos was right. And that probably rankles with Holden as well, that Amos was right.
And then led them into a trap.
Yeah. I mean, he literally led them into a trap, got them all shot at. Fortunately, none of them got shot. They were only the four
of
them.
It's an unusual. There's moments, because Holden is, you know, the quixotic. He's guided by his morality, but it is his morality. It's not, you know, so occasionally that sort of breaks down into like a very emotional reaction, and this is an emotional reaction, you know.
He does have emotional reactions to things that aren't as logical as he sometimes seems.
It's interesting, sort of like, so is Kenzo just like hired as a spy? Is he a professional spy?
Well,
because there's no ideological. Like he's you know, doing corporate
espionage. I think that's part of the point of what Drew was saying, is that he's so used to subterfuge and bullshitting people that he can't really communicate.
So would he have just like broken down and goes, look, I'm not even supposed to be here. Just like,
well, he kind of goes, oh, no, I've got a family. And he's like, oh, yeah, you got a wife and a kid and a goldfish. You know, he just gives all the lines that you'd expect somebody to give. Who's completely insincere.
And he gives him every fucking opportunity, like three times, like, say something sincere to me, say something real. It's like dealing with a salesman, basically, and like, you know, salesman trying to, and you're like, no, be a person and tell me about this thing, and they spiel, you know, they're just incapable.
Yeah. Like a Tory. But, yeah, I mean, I don't blame him, because it's like
it's not like he's an evil person. He's just trapped in what he is.
Yeah, he's trapped. Yeah, like it's like I've forgotten. I do the human thing when I'm on Earth at home, and you know, this is just like
It's maybe not fair. I mean, he's literally just doing his job. He's demonstrated earlier that he believes he's doing his job is like for the good. It's moral, because he thinks Fred Johnson is a terrorist, which I don't think we would think, but it's a legitimate, in that world, it's a legitimate position, perhaps.
Yeah.
From that point, I mean, I don't know. Like, we know more about Fred Johnson than anyone on Earth would be. Like, if we were Earth people in this scenario, we would probably think very ill of Fred Johnson because, like, how many people, how many butchers of Anderson Station would we read?
I'm sure they've been propagandized about it, or, you know, up the wazoo.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's
so yeah. It's not that he's a bad person; it's that he's trapped in this. He's incapable of being a human being, and
Holden
doesn't like that.
And it's,
maybe it's more Holden can't trust that. Like, you can't trust somebody like that is perhaps more the problem.
Yeah, and he doesn't know if Kenzo has anything to do with anything going on in the station anyway.
You know? Well, this is the thing. Yeah, I mean, Kenzo has shown not just that he's betrayed them at the station, but he could be transmitting anything anywhere on relays and things as well. So, you know, once they realize it, all the connections and all the tech, once, you know, because he realizes the tech. Obviously, Miller knows the tech from having discovered other people with them. I was going to say augments there. See, I'm falling into your trap. You know, I think Holden's just he's more trusting up to start with, and he just loses. You know, once he loses his faith in you,
I think the events of those few days or whatever it is in the show just like makes him a bit more cynical, takes him more up to Amos's level.
It's more pragmatic about things.
There's another nice scene in the is it called Pachinko?
The Pachinko parlor. Yeah.
Oh, actually, I've got
We get a little bit about Miller's upbringing. We get some clues about brought up as a gutter rat. And would you rather be the boot or the ass kind of thing? And that's why they became cops.
Yeah, but that was what Semi. Yeah, it was Semi that. Yeah, because he does say, because he talks about stealing from the machines.
Yeah,
and then he talks about getting older and his hands too big, and he gets stuck one day, and then he gets a beating from somebody, and Miller and Holden says to him, so then you decide to become cops, you know, and he goes, well, it was Semi's idea. He said one day, do you want to be the arse or do you want to be the boot?
Which is...
And then he says to him, which are you now? And Miller doesn't answer.
Yeah. And,
which is interesting. In fact, Miller's questioned all the way through these two episodes as to who he is anymore.
And I think we, like, working class kids get sort of tricked to becoming cops and, you know, army. Yeah. Which we would you could call class traitors, you know, it's class traitorship. Not to say you know, we have empathy for those people. They're in shitty situations, and that's a way of getting out of shitty situations. I'm not pissing on them, but oh, I forgot my point. There was a point to do with
Well, with I mean, the boot and the ass metaphor. We've heard it a million times in different ways, right? Yeah. Like there's the famous Team America, which is
choosing a stick. I think you mean Jimmy Miller
or your ass. Miller, yeah. Sorry,
so he says no. He says Holden and he's thing, but sorry.
Oh right, yeah.
This
yeah,
is so like, yeah. Apropos of what we were talking about a second ago that Cheese said in the chat. He says at that point it feels like they want to erode Holden a bit, but I think he means erode Miller a bit.
Oh, so what's that in reference to?
The Miller's, you know, are you now the boot or the arse? You know, what are you now? And also, but all the way through these episodes, that people are questioning Miller. In a way that he's, you know, he was only ever like back in series. He was Willwala. That was it. Yeah. He was a class traitor, and he was treated like that. But then, ever since the sort of leaving, well, just before he left, when he first goes when he goes to that bar in episode 8 with
Dawes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Cheesness was going further back than that. My apologies. Right, we'll come back to that in a second, Jesus. Yeah, but when Miller goes into that bar with Dawes, Dawes sees him in a different light. And he's questioning, you know, that's when Dawes mentions destiny and stuff.
It's a turning point for Miller.
And I think there's been a few like that, like the conversation with the Mormon on the ship, on the shuttle, and then a couple of other times, including this bit when he has this conversation with Miller, with Holden. And Holden says, you know, well, which are you now? And he doesn't answer. It's like he's like.
Well, there's those moments on Eros where Holden and Miller are working together, and Miller is kind of we know from what Miller said before. He's only killed one person up to that point. When he tells that story to his ex, when she shot somebody, and he says the only person I ever killed was blah blah blah. Yeah,
was that what he says? The only one? I thought he said it was the first one. Just. I thought it was about the first time. I don't because he's very blasé about it in this. On these two episodes, Drew is frozen.
Drew frozen.
Yeah, that's brilliant. He's going to love that when he sees it in the video.
Oh, he's back.
He's back. Oh. We're all over the place. Well, can we kick?
I'm sorry, I won't say it again. I'm sorry.
Can we kick this? Oh, I've done it wrong. Can we kick this Drew off? How do we get?
I don't know. Am I guessing? We're all, I've got a rectangle window there, so look at that. See, the reason I did this one, this screenshot, like quite early on, because it, like the use of color in this entire episode, I would say this entire show really, is just interesting and visual. Like, I'm sure it means something that I'm, you know, haven't yet sort of digested.
I don't doesn't necessarily have, you know, literal meaning, but it tells your brain things about what's going on.
Yeah, like Avicerella and the very high contrast environment of everything being black or white, or, you know, like very crisp.
Yeah,
and this is just color. It's colorful amidst.
Yeah, everything else is grey. Even this is greyed out a bit. Behind
you, it's like a rundown seaside town. It's colourful and drab at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. Back to Cheesness's point, then. Now that we've got our Drew sorted out.
I just finish about, so just Miller's excessive violence.
And you've also stopped sitting in the middle of the screen again.
We know
it's a gypsy thing, you know?
But Miller is kind of excessively violent, and my take on that, and that's a bit shocking to Holden. He looks at him a bit, you know, like are you a psychopath?
Yeah, when he picks up, takes the helmet off the guy and just wipes the blood off.
And I think that's Miller. He doesn't know who he is now. He's got to discover who he is, and he's trying stuff out. He's like, am I this? Am I that? You know, he's working out who he is, and I think that's what's going on.
Fair point. So Drew, yeah, if you talk about Holden getting more cynical. Yeah. They are trying to erode Holden. Do you mean the writers, the story? I mean, the universe.
I get what Jesus means there. Like, Holden is being... So he's held up as the quixotic, like, always moral, always does the right thing. And now he's facing situations that make that difficult. And he's going a bit off the rails. He doesn't quite know how to do. I mean, again, you know, Don Quixote, really.
Yeah.
You know, the process of Don Quixote. He discovers reality, and Sancho Panza discovers fantasy.
Yeah. This is something that Miller's mom says as well. She never had the heart to tell him that it was a tragedy.
Yeah, Holden.
Holden's mom. Holden's mom.
Yeah. So I think Holden is going to have to work out how to be a good person in an imperfect world, basically,
which is difficult.
So he's going to go off the rails for a bit.
Chisnes has got a take on colourful or drab. He's got there. I feel it says something about who, even when in poverty, even when oppressed, people still find ways to express themselves and be human. Ooh. There's a vibrancy to be found in slums. Yeah, and you got graffiti and. And things like that, and you know, in the impoverished areas, you quite often get that sort of thing. Yeah. Mm.
Is Miller's old chum? Is he called Semi Timber or Semi?
But yeah,
we call him Semi. Yeah, but yeah,
yeah. Because he goes a bit nasty at the end, doesn't he?
Oh, he does. Yeah.
Well, all through the tunnels, he's very unnecessarily critical of Naomi.
Hmm. Like, yeah, all the way, like, he doesn't. Like... Well, see, this is. I think this is back to the original class war thing of the whole show, is that he's not. He's an Earther, it seems. I think.
Oh, you think?
No, well, he gives Miller the Earther hat.
Gives Miller the Earther hat, and I think this is where. Oh no, because he says they grew up together as well. Mm. But Semi's like muscly, and you know, he doesn't look like a belter at all.
Semi and Miller growing up, I think Semi was the leader in that situation, and Miller followed along.
And Miller idolized him a bit.
Miller says things that Semi says back in the day, and Semi's like, "Oh yeah, I used to say a lot of shit back in the day." So Miller definitely looks up to Semi, and I think often in that kind of dynamic, that the sort of leader character is a bit of a dick. And I think Semi, like, he was necessary for Miller, like they needed each other for survival. But I think Semi is a bit of a dick, maybe a bit of a bully. And the way he's talking to Naomi through those tunnels, like, rather than encouraging her, which is, you know, what you might want to do in that situation, he's like, "You're a fucking idiot. You're going the wrong way. You don't know what you're doing. You're incompetent," which is not how you encourage somebody to success.
See, I don't know if that's the him being a boot and her being an arse, or if that's him being a man, her being a woman. You know, there's all sorts of him being a cop, her being a potentially OP. Because this is another day. That was the other thing I was going to say. Yeah. Naomi knows all the OPA signs in the tunnel. She knows about that stuff, which gives us more of this sort of what is Naomi. But back to the point about Semi though, is he does say we grew up with him. So that's I'm very confused about that as to where they stand in that. But he's obviously very ruthless. We get the impression that he killed that guy to stop him. From, I mean, on one hand,
he doesn't know these people.
That's
and he's
true.
Trying to survive, you know. Say on the ship, you know, we as people who followed the protagonist through the show, we're clearly on one side.
Yeah,
but from his point of view, no, let's get the fuck
but
out.
He does,
of here.
But he does start ordering everybody around. He orders Alex to get ready to go. He orders. This is a very bad idea. He orders Amos to do something.
Yeah,
you know. And I mean, Naomi's in pure shock that whole time as well, because she's got the guy's blood on her face. Amos had just shot him.
Yeah.
And then Amos says, "You say we stay, boss." And he's very Amos is just Amos about it, you know. So there's an interesting contrast. Amos and Miller act in very similar ways in this episode, because there's a lot of gunplay. You know, there's a lot of violence to survive. But there's a very obvious difference between them still, and that's I can just put that down to good acting, because both actors are amazingly good actors. Yeah. Wes Chatham as Amos is amazingly good, especially when you don't know. I don't think he'd read all the books or anything. I don't think he knew everything about the Expanse before playing the part. But he got Amos right away, and the writers say that about him. And I think that. He's very matter of fact about things as well. Like he kills the guy, says, "Right, you say we stay, boss." He puts the gun away, and he's just very flat. Whereas Miller,
that's a problem to be solved.
Yeah, and
he solved the problem.
Yeah, and whereas Miller seems almost more cruel.
Yeah, he's emotionally acting. I think he's got anger.
Mm.
He's angry at, you know, the world. I mean, he doesn't know who he is. He's adrift, and he's lashing out, and he's
Yeah, I think with Amos, it was like you like. I think also there was like a recognized like people like this on a ship are just like. It's a problem. Yeah,
I mean, he could. I mean, it's not an Amos thing to do, but he could have restrained him.
Yeah,
locked up like they did with Kenzo, but that's not Amos.
Yeah, he just pulled the gun out.
He points the gun at Naomi. He was dead as soon as he did that.
Yeah.
As soon as he points a gun at Naomi, he's a dead man. Yeah. Amos is going to kill him. There's no
restraining someone.
Yeah, just going to go back. Cheesiness has joined in with some of what we said there. So Semi seems to have brought into a different ideology. Yeah, Semi's got a different. Yeah, Drew was saying, it's like once they split up, it became a completely different thing. Mm. And he says it's been a little while since he watched, but there's also is there also some tension between Ceres and other Belters? People who live on Ceres have more stability, stroke permanence than those who live in ships, and that reflects in some of the factionalism in the Belt. I'd say that there's factionalism with everybody in the Belt just because they live in different places, and Eros is obviously more. Eros obviously has a lot more poverty. I mean, Eros is very similar to Ceres.
In this episode, that Eros used to be like the jewel of the Belt. Like, that used to be the high class or whatever place in the Belt. And it's, fallen on hard times,
yeah. So, you know, Eros and Ceres are pretty similar in most respects in that way. And a lot of people don't. I mean, a lot of people in the Belt don't live on ships or asteroids at all. A lot of them live on moons because there are stations. Mm. It's the Outer Planets Alliance. And it's the Belt, Jupiter, and Saturn, and it's the moons. There's lots of moons, and we see in later stream. We do see settlements on other moons and stuff later as well.
It's certainly true that the inhabitants of Ceres have an easier time, like they have an easier life than a lot of other Belters for sure. But it's a bit at that point.
It's very marginal, though. Yeah.
If you live in a working class town, but you live in a detached house, you're the posh one. You know what I mean? It's on that kind of level.
Yeah, yeah. It's tiny margins. It's the line of paint between two ex council houses sort of thing.
You've got a back garden. You're middle class.
There was one line. What CPM? They are the. Is that the?
That's the Eros version. It's the Eros version of Star Helix. They're the cops on Eros.
Okay. Well, no, not exactly.
No,
because Semi says that because Semi didn't originally work for them.
Oh,
CPM came in. More recently, and took over the cops as well. Right. And that's where, we mentioned it earlier, that's where the OPA gangster factions from Ceres disappeared to, which allowed a lot of things. So there's, it's what Drew said right early on. There's so many tiny little details that are not irrelevant. Nothing's irrelevant. Yeah. There's no gristle, there's no fat. This show is just written... it's not, and at the same time, it's not doing the sort of like the Star Wars thing of shoving everything with an explanation, making everything mean something. It's not that either. It really does fit together.
There's no fat, but it must be marbled.
Nicely marbled. Yes, exactly. That's perfect. Actually, yeah.
Although one thing on Eros that I think is worthy of note, if not only for a few minutes, is that. When Miller and Holden, is there not a warning sign when Miller and Holden go into the hard shelter and they find all those people? I suppose the warning
sign... it's a radiation shelter. It's saying it's a radiation.
Yeah, you're meant to go inside it to avoid being irradiated.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of what they're...
It doesn't mean...
Is it Superman 2 where they reverse the anti-superhero thing or Superman 3? No, not going around the Earth. The other one where he has the chamber thing.
Yeah, there need to be two signs. One for, maybe one upside down version of the other, or like, you know how nuclear is like, it's black on yellow. Well, maybe like black on yellow is like, there's go in here for less radiation, and then black on red for go in here for more radiation.
Rather than radiation with like a line through it, you go for reversing the colours.
So I don't
know. Yeah, that's,
Colorblind people, well, take a best shot.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's it's not fair. Yeah, no. The only thing that I remember, I mean, you can bring it up on your magic background, but the only thing I remember seeing in that little, I don't know what you'd call it, an airlock into a radiation shelter. Mm-hmm. It's on the little key thing that the symbols come up that I saw. And it flashes and beeps before the blast of radiation.
There's a sign by the door saying like radiation shelter with a radiation symbol, I think.
Yeah, I've got one.
Yeah,
that's here,
what I say. Chris can bring it up and switch his lights to show us.
Also, just in case we don't mention, like, it doesn't matter, but like we get revenge for Miller's partner.
Mm-hmm.
Against Cole Cathari.
Oh, the guy that's because he's one of the guys. He's one of the thugs, isn't he?
Miller goes, he had it coming.
So it's very subtle.
When you see the little panel though, that starts beeping and flashing with a symbol when just before the radiation blast hits the thing. So they're expecting to be safe from radiation. Sorry, mate, on you go.
So when the laser thing comes down and just goes, it's so sudden and so inescapable. Like, it's horrifying. Like, by the time you understand what's happening to you, it's happened. Kind of thing.
But the laser's unnecessary. That was just a visual.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah.
What's that even supposed to do?
Like a neutron beam or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. They've been zapped by radiation, which is invisible. Yeah. So. But the thing is that the point of it in the story is that they are putting some people with the proton. They've injected them with the proton molecule. Mm-hmm. They shove them into somewhere they can't get away. They enclose them in something that's radiation proof, and then zap that chamber with radiation. So they're keeping all the energy in, or they thought they were until two clowns go along and open the door. they're keeping all the energy in. Also note that without a second thought, even Holden ignores the guy that they shot, the guy that got shot. Even Holden ignores the guy they were carrying. That little panel when the radiation thing happens, that starts beeping and the little key that's in it shows a radiation symbol and goes
There's a radiation. It's just off me there, but like there's a little radiation symbol. Blast door.
No, on the bottom part on the key.
Oh, on the key itself?
The key that's sticking out, that starts flashing and beep. The thing starts flashing and beeping and the key itself changes. You know, like the image, the screen of the key.
I love that this is our way of showing screenshots so much.
I know. We tried it a more sensible way this is way more fun.
Yeah.
Because it gets Chris going.
Oh, turn blue, Chris.
Turn blue, Chris, yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, see, that's his access override, but that's a screen. When that key, when the change happens, when they're just about to be zapped, that starts flashing. The whole panel and the key, like, you know, the little light that's coming through the key, that all starts flashing, and the key changes to be sort of orangey with a radiation symbol or something similar on it. So there is a warning for anybody that stood there, and the doors, but they've jammed the door open, basically. So it's going, oh, this is going to happen now. Are you sure you don't want to stop this, you know, leaving this door wide open, you know? Oh, well, I'm just a key. What do I know? Chris has disappeared forever now.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean it, Chris. Come back. We love you.
He's muted as well. It's the ghost of Chris.
It's a force ghost of Chris.
Force ghost.
No, you're muted.
Yeah, he does. Does he know he's muted? On Jitsi, you're muted.
Oh, yeah, I muted myself. Yeah. I think I clicked that when I tried to get the background or something. The bodies wriggling on the floor is very, like, Human Centipede 2 vibes.
Oh, God. You're obsessed.
Have you got your own little, like, achievement?
I'm beginning to wonder if he every is... Single. There's two theories I've got here. Mm-hmm. He's in the pocket of Big Human Centipede. Or... he's involved with some sort of Human Centipede experiment and he's trying not to, he's sort of projecting a bit, you know?
Projecting a little bit. Show us your ass, Chris. Sorry?
Show us your ass. I want to check nobody's connected to it.
Oh, he's got an SD card stuck up there, remember?
Yeah. No, that's in the foreskin. Oh, that's the micro SD.
That's micro SD. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I would love to do Space Virgins with the Human Centipede because you.
Well, it's not Space Virgins anymore, is it? Space Virgins because it's this.
Okay, then Centipede.
The real slappers, really. You're the virgin.
the Centipede, Centipede Center Parks. I'm not saying people should watch them because they are very traumatizing films, especially if you go and pirate them, because that's the unedited, uncensored, and there's some fucked up shit in them. Like, you can get them on Amazon Prime. Like, literally, I've never screamed out loud at a film before, except for The Human Centipede 2. That's the worst one in terms of, like, the first one's dull as shit, right? You only want to watch the first one to get to the second two. And the third one is a comedy.
I would struggle to watch them, psychologically, but I'm potentially up for it.
I think you could skip to the third one if you wanted. If you want to skip straight to the comedy.
No, I'd watch them. I'd just have to do it in doses.
I got through
Vivitch, and that was very hard. I watched that in I would watch 5 minutes and take a 20-minute break, and then watch 5 minutes and so on.
Yeah, but then you have to stretch the Human Centipede.
No, I know. Yeah.
Stretch what?
Stretch the Human Centipede.
stretch the Human Centipede out way too long. No, it's interesting, but it's the second Human Centipede film is let's make a film as offensively disgusting as possible,
yeah.
To the point where it's like it's kind of, it will make you laugh at how disgusting it gets, because it's like it becomes absurd. It's and of course only the Dutch could create such a film. But there we go. So that's the centipede portion of this episode taken care of.
I can't find anything in the emojis that even remotely becomes a. It's not even just a centipede. Obviously, not a human centipede, but.
I mean, it's.
Do the emojis do that thing where they come up the screen?
I've not got it set up for this because I deliberately didn't want it. Because, well, when we started doing this, I felt like it was kind of Chris's thing a bit, and I didn't want to put, my stuff onto Chris's thing.
It's okay. You can put your stuff on.
I can turn it on if you want.
It's as far as I'm concerned, it's just a, I don't know. It is what it is, right? Like, it's,
I'm trying to find what it is.
A big mess, space mess. Really? Space mess.
There you go. You can type it again, Drew, and it'll come up. There you go. You can get.
Okay. I'm assuming then the big revelation about Thoth. Is Thoth a ship then?
Jesus. What is that? Is that a caterpillar? Yeah.
Turnip tree, note, leaf, dog playing a ukulele, and then tree with wanking hands on it.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
That's not me, that's Chris. I'm not.
Is there a story for you?
Are there spoilers in that?
Well, only if you read it back to front.
Okay. Right, where the fuck are we?
Okay, what the hell is Thoth?
Yeah, I still don't. No, you guys mentioned that, and I'm like, what?
Uploaded to Thoth.
Never picked up on that. I like that it's another Egyptian god. That's cool. I assume it's another project or a way of storing, somewhere to store the data, a place where they're doing more.
Yeah, I'm gonna cheat a wee bit.
The last Egyptian god, Anubis.
Right, Chris, do not look this up.
Okay.
Because, well, don't look at the Expanse wiki at all, because it's got all of the seasons on it. But we can give you a little bit of a.
It's a ship, isn't it?
No, it's a station. A station owned by Protogen.
I know.
So it's kind of uploading to their servers was kind of close enough.
I'll say this, you're not going to need to wait long to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you don't watch series two.
So there's a second series space station. Oh, interesting.
Spoilers,
yeah. Spoilers, they're in space and they've got space station. Thoth, yes, Andrew, and a Thoth. Oh, hang on.
Yeah,
no,
because the thing is,
Thoth, T-H-O-T-H.
I've already done this, but you weren't here, so Thoth.
That's Thoth.
Yeah, Brown Thoth.
Brown Thoth.
So, So if it's named after an Egyptian god, there's a good chance that it's Jules Pierre's corporation's thing.
I mean, so it's like, part of, we know
that anyway because of the team are in, yeah, they're all connected. I mean, in this they're explicit about it in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, Anubis.
That means Paul's cat Truffles is around.
good.
In case you're wondering.
Okay.
Hamish has disappeared for me. Oh, he's back. Never mind.
All right. I think that's
Gypsy's
all.
Gypsy's having a time this evening.
Yeah, I've seen the little poor signal Gypsy thing coming up.
If we're about done with the Expanse stuff, I do have a wrap-up question.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a wrap-up question for each of you. I have my answer.
Well, can I just... I just want to check my notes first.
Yeah.
Oh, there is one thing. We've touched on, but we haven't gone into it.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, yeah, we talked about Jules Pierre's Mao reaction to his daughter's death, which was a wee bit, he looked a wee bit upset, but then he seemed way more energized about the project.
It seemed very, crocodile tears-ish, like not really. He definitely cares about his daughter, but like not.
In the way that a billionaire would care about his image.
Yeah.
The series gangs thing, we mentioned that, but we didn't go into, we didn't really tie it back. We mentioned it in a sort of vague way.
Go on.
I was just going to say, well, we find out that CPM are hired the gangs of thugs from series station.
Yeah.
To come and be in their, to be their thug, their muscle. But we didn't really mention that what that opened up was all the stuff with the kid whose name I forgot.
Stealing the water.
Uncle Mateo's nephew, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it wasn't just him. It was him and other people were taking advantage of the thugs being gone. You know, so that was But that's, I suppose we've kind of covered that.
We did mention that.
And Aaron Wright, I mentioned that his report was convenient. Mentioned that. Yeah. Naomi knows the OPA signs. Yeah, and Aaron Wright's connection to Frank's death. Now I'm a bit vague on how we get that from. I might have sort of been sort of spaced out for a minute, but Avasarala's husband says it outright. He says it directly to, as if him and Avasarala know this already for a fact. I think that might be because Avasarala got her own version of the story from Graf's notes, where, you know, what Aaron Wright says is kind of like a constructed version that seems to be somewhere between de Graaf's notes and Fred Johnson's broadcast. And it's like he's then twisted it all to fit his story about Fred Johnson being the bad guy, basically.
But this opens up a possibility that... So de Graaf's partner says he's been paid for these trips away to basically look busy or
to make it
trope, isn't it, when like, you know, the husband loses his job and has to keep pretending that he's, you know, goes to sit on a park bench every day pretend he's still working. Not because the husband knows, but
it's like, could it even be the case that there is something else afoot? Maybe he is going away to do something, and then his death, him being murdered, might actually be, I don't know, it might be more linked into it.
Well, maybe that's where and when he was making this last set of notes.
Yeah.
Maybe he was sort of trying to do his own detective work. You know? Yeah. I think it's a bit vague in the series. I don't think there's anything, you know, unless... Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of little background details. It's like, what's his name? Film director, quite old, Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott is famous for having like things put in the set and everything that you would never see in the film, but it makes it authentic. And it's like that.
Magazines on magazine stands, and every magazine has like a legitimate like space cover, or you know.
Space cover, yeah. Everything's space when we're talking about these things. Well, I wonder if a lot of the time you see, like, remember I pointed out to you, Chris, and you were like, oh, need to pay attention to those, the news bulletins that are sometimes. So you'll get the same information that we've got as an audience, or that the Belters and the population have got from, you know, messages like Holden's. But there's the official thing, the news report, which is obviously made by like an Earth corporation or something, and they put a spin on it, you know, and make it certain way. Well, I wonder if another thing that we could be catching is like you've got, you know, you've got a freeze frame of a panel there. If Avasarala's got, like, when you see Avasarala with the sort of data pad thing that she got the information from the pencil, it's all little sections, and there's like a networky section at the top, and then there's a bit in the middle with written stuff or data from something. There's a bit down one side, and then at the bottom is the sort of handwritten stuff as well. So it's all split up, and you don't see it for very long. And I wonder if there's like things in those that are actually giving us more background information, because it's a way to do it in a TV show without, you know, where, you know, in a book you've got room to like put a, you know, you can literally put a page with a report printed out in it as a page of a book. But in a TV show, you wouldn't sit with a huge like A4 tightly written bit of paper to be detailed, you know.
Do you mean like, so there's a segment at the top? Now, this isn't the one I think.
No, this isn't the one, but it's around about the same sort of setup though.
Yeah, so you got something at the top.
It's when she's got the pencils, the digital pencil.
Like, it's got bits sticking out like that. Is that something that like you can have a hologram?
They do that at times with the phone.
Is that the desk?
With their little phone.
No, that's on the helicopter.
On the flight that she's on. Yeah.
But yeah, when they're using their phone.
I also wonder. Here's a little aside. No, it's not an aside. Here's a detail of that. Who's sitting opposite Avasarala on that aircraft? There's somebody with a suit sitting opposite her, playing that video of Fred. you know, audibly, not in an earpiece or anything. And I'm wondering, I can't remember if we see who it is, but I didn't have time to go back because we were watching them before we came to do the recording.
Oh, well, first off, I'm looking at that scene now, but this is the one you're on about.
That's it. See, there's like data down one side. There's the little network message. There's the direct information in the middle part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that little bit at the top with the data thing. And then right at the bottom is the handwriting as well.
Yeah.
So there's like diagrams. Oh yeah, and that's the advanced gunship. That's those gunships. They've got that sort of the crew around a central pillar. I thought that was spoiler. Chris, shut your eyes and ears for a second. But I thought that was something else, Drew. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, yeah.
But then the answer to that is obviously same tech, isn't it? Same source.
Yeah.
It's okay, you won't have to wait long to find out what we're talking about, Chris.
She's talking to someone on the plane.
Yeah, there's somebody there. But I don't know if we see them properly.
They could just be like bodyguard or something.
Well, I can give you the background. Select background. But I don't know. This is Mystery Man. This is really all we see of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You see that bit, but I don't think you see them from the opposite side at any point, do you? But like Drew says, we do know from later that she's got a bodyguard usually, so I wonder if... haven't we already seen her main bodyguard?
Does that guy not
come until series two?
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's nothing... I'm not... You know, there's no spoiler to that. She's a high-ranking official. She's got bodyguards.
Also, I don't know if this means anything, but there's a little interface on the side of the pencil.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, no data.
Yeah,
so it's probably not a real pencil then. Although then they're not going to have real pencils; they'll have mechanical pencils. But it looks like a real pencil. Oh, but it's on the back end of it,
isn't it? Yeah, it's the other side that she's tapping things with. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because like it's trying to be two things that are incompatible, kind of. I'm trying to.
You're really obsessed with this, Chris, aren't you? I think you should look it up.
You're very clear about how this show doesn't have phony technology, as it were.
No, but there's some, you know, there's some sops to the future.
I mean, like I say, the Wacom thing is basically that.
Yeah.
It's not inconceivable technology.
And also,
I'm going to look it up just to...
Yeah, see-through screens, yeah.
See-through screens.
Oh,
like,
God, yeah.
I know. Now that you've fucking mentioned it, I can't unsee it. I never see through screens.
Yeah,
like
I think it's something that Angela Collier mentions in the Picard video. Actually, so yeah. She really
doesn't like them either. Yeah.
I mean, it's anti-technology. It makes it harder.
I can accept it's just at some point somebody decided it looks cool.
No, no. Well, I mean...
I think I'll have a thing where I look at the thing I'm trying to interact with at the same time and then put my finger on top of it. No, no, no. Touch screens are a fucking awful idea, full stop.
They're fine.
No,
also for aesthetics, let's make them as slippery as fucking possible.
Yep.
Again, they're fine. Like, what?
No, a grip on the back. Just a texture on the back.
No, so but you have to buy a separate cover for that.
You have to create a marker.
Yeah, you don't want the cover to be the same part of your phone.
You buy a cover. What are you, a grandma? Well,
don't have a cover then. Like, it's fine. Old man yells at cloud.
Yes, the cloud is terrible too.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The bullet. I've got one other note, but it's like the bullet.
Jesus with us. It's 3-1.
Jesus.
Yep, Jesus. Exactly. So he says it in a much more polite and... A much more polite and erudite way than I did. I just went, put your fucking fingers...
I mean, that's the same with keys on a keyboard. You're putting your finger over the key on the keyboard.
But you can see the screen. You can see what's happening on the screen. If you type something wrong, you can see it.
You're not obscuring the thing you're interacting with.
Yeah, you're interacting, not obscuring.
But you don't, because if you do swish typing, like the most efficient way to type...
Talking about typing, I'm talking about buttons on things and clicking on links and stuff. Like, you're obscuring...
Ghost is on our side as well.
It's like if you had a sniper rifle and the scope just had a finger in the fucking middle of it. So
exactly. Yeah, you have to use your fingers to make the scope adjust. Yeah. You know, no, you have things on the outside so you can still look through the scope.
I mean, they're a compromise for a computer that you can use on the train. A small computer.
Yeah, they're not then you can say that about laptops and all things. Like, yeah, like obviously if you've got a station, workstation set up,
screen and buttons. What an amazing idea!
That's a cursor that you can move around without obscuring.
Oh yeah, and a cursor control.
Yeah, that you can obscure around a tiny bit of the screen, like
or bring back styluses, Palm OS with a stylus.
Excellent. I'd still love to use Palm.
I mean, if you need the accessibility aid of a stylus, presumably you can get some kind of thing for
you. You can get a capacitive touchscreen stylus. Yeah.
Even the French ghostie is on the right side of this one.
Yeah, Jesus says you have to put your thumb over the mans you want to shoot. Exactly.
I mean,
that would make Day of the Jackal very different. There you go.
Well,
watermelon would be fine.
it's fine. Like, I mean. Yeah, they're not as efficient as a computer fully set up and designed.
I knew Paul was going to be on your side, Chris. Because Paul's a dirty, filthy Apple lover.
I mean, I don't
although they do things slightly better than most other people, it has to be said. Of course, they charge 10 times as much.
Devices, but like, in terms of just like getting something done, like it's kind of fine. And also easy to clean. Like, buttons are filthy.
But you just have to look at it the wrong way and it gets dirty instantly. No.
I mean,
overruled.
Well, I mean, I
bloody kiss.
Fine.
Go on. Play that. I'm the one who goes outdoors. Card.
Yeah. Go on. Mister, in the real world.
Is that like?
Chinese and the disabled.
He does, yeah. Yeah, we know that.
Well, as that may be...
True, he says, right?
There's a reason why we seem to have converged on the one design. I know both of you are going to say, capitalism. But
no,
like,
it is capitalism. It's like, that one was popular, let's all do it. And it's not because of functionality, it's because that was popular, let's make something that looks the same.
The thing is,
they all look the same now, that's the horrible thing.
Your button machine has a much smaller screen, and that...
Yeah, but you could make it a bigger screen. That's just an old one. I mean, that's an example, it's an older one.
So
there is nothing. There is nothing stopping you from...
Chip Boy or something. What are the ones that have a... have a keyboard and you can run Linux on them. And
there's lots of different ones.
Then you can't run anything that you need to interact with the real world. Like, they're not,
What are they called, though? They're I think Veronica explains as
oh, the chip, the something chip. Are you thinking of
there's a few different types of them?
Yeah. Well, I had Open Pandora.
They seem kind of nice. Are they expensive?
Yes. But so the power you get, and they're very expensive. And the new version, the Pyra, it's been in development for a very long time.
See, it's
superseded every 5 minutes by something commercial because.
Yeah, and also, but the thing is, the multi-use of these is actually kind of fantastic as well. Like, you can just, like, you know, they're sort of cheap to produce, and why am I selling fucking phones?
It doesn't
matter. Society.
They're only cheap to produce because of the people you're oppressing in China, my friend.
Not necessarily.
The
Huawei Corporation treats their workers rather quite well. But
according to your propaganda, Chris is in the pocket of big phone.
Big phone.
Big phone.
Literally big phone. Yeah, it's all their own big phones. Because we were talking about that the other day. My favourite phone that I've ever had, my favourite mobile phone I've ever had, was my little Motorola V50 or was it V50? Something like that. And it's just a little silver flip phone thing. And it's
The thing is, I don't.
And I had a separate PDA.
As a society now, we've moved past phones. The only reason I have a phone number is to verify my identity for capitalist reasons.
I wouldn't be giving phone number to capitalists.
I mean, it's the only, because especially because I have a VPN, so I don't have a domestic IP address. The only reason I have a phone number is because you need one in society. Like, I have the cheapest phone plan I can find, which has just bloody fucking gone up in price, but that's besides the point.
Mine's is a fiver a month.
Yeah, mine's a fiver a month. That's like the cheapest you can get a phone line that actually functions these days. There are some like forwarding services that are a bit cheaper, but...
Are you talking about your mobile phone?
Yeah, mobile phone pays you go.
I've still got a landline, but I've never plugged a phone into it. Not in this house.
Yeah, like I don't have a landline. It's the only thing that people will call me on. Like, my union rep calls me on the telephone. But it's like...
Wait, are you making fun of us there, Chris?
Well, kind of. Like, the telephone numbers and all that kind of stuff, they're very rarely, like, needed these days.
So why are they still around? Why is it that we use that as an identifier? Why haven't we come up with something better?
We should come up with something better, because...
Telephones are like IP addresses, really. They're not... They're like an IP address. It's not really...
Now, but it's an entirely different network. We've got two networks on the same device for... That do the same thing.
Most phone stuff now probably just goes through the internet anyway. But the thing is like I having a portable computer is a useful idea to me.
Yeah,
but having
I'm fine with portable computers. It doesn't have to be attached to your phone, spying on you and spying on everything you do. It doesn't have to have a touch screen. It doesn't have to be. No. Don't you be conflating. Me not liking phones with me not liking technology. Don't be trying to push the wrong idea about me here.
No, because you said your favorite phone was the Motorola, and
that was my favorite phone.
All that does is phone
and text. Apart from the things I'm forced to do by society, like have a bank thingy and a couple of other little bits and pieces, that's all I do with this. And even then, that seems to pretty much have ground to halt as well.
I play a general knowledge quiz called Smarticus when I'm on the toilet.
I play a game installed through F-Droid called Lexica, which is a sort of jump. What do you call it? Boggle type thing. There you go.
I don't use my phone as much as a normal person either. But
what's a normal person? Wait, whoa! See this, Drew? See this? Do you hear that? Normal person.
Abnormal. I'm not saying I'm a normal person.
By implication, you were saying we were abnormal.
You certainly are, yes.
I'm
going to storm out and also have a space piss, coincidentally.
Okay, but no, like, I mean, it's like, like with with phones, like, I mean, also they don't have to spy on you, right? It's like, you know, there's
they don't have to, no, but
no,
do.
there are ways to, you know, like, you can not have
you can minimize it, you can't stop it mostly.
We can't do that with phones anyway, right? Like, you know, if you don't want any spying, like, the purpose of a phone, or the purpose even of a portable computer, is to connect you with the internet, right? If you don't want
Paul,
to
a normal person, don't let fool.
If you don't want to do that, then you don't carry a phone, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
right?
True.
The simple of it. Anything other than that is a, you know, a compromise, right? Yeah, they still.
Yeah, they're always pinging. Yeah, there's always a connect. There's always something going on. But I mean, you know,
I wonder how much the IP, how much a VPN on them locks them down, whether or not whether or not they ping around the IPN, if that's such a thing as possible.
Well, that's the problem with that. Yeah, yeah. You with that. That's why I prefer a hard connection to a network as well, and your own router where you know what it's doing.
You know? While pissing, I invented something better than a touch screen. So
doesn't take long, does
back,
it?
You touch the back, and that moves a cursor around on the front. So you just touch.
Excellent.
And tap.
See?
There we go. Done.
Give this man $1 billion.
Isn't that?
I mean, trial it. But then, yeah, I mean, it's. But then you've got two screens, then, haven't you?
Cheesiness doesn't have a mobile phone. He says.
Ooh.
Nice.
How do you like? But the thing is, it's like you need it for the bank. How do you do it for the banking app? Or
yeah, we're forced. I mean, he's in Australia, so maybe they're not forced into it yet.
What about because WhatsApp is like a thing that if you want to talk to normal people,
I've never used WhatsApp.
To be fair, my bank doesn't require a phone thing. I don't use a phone thing for my bank.
Do you have a key mash thing? How do you log in then?
Just on the web.
Which bank are you with?
Lloyds.
Right, NatWest. They have an online banking thing, but if you want to do certain things with it, you need to put your bank card into a little what looks like a tiny little calculator thing.
Not anything like that at all.
I've got HSBC. You need an app, or they give you a gadget.
I'm having a migraine now, so I can't see most of you, which is ironic given what Cheese was saying a moment ago. I have become temporarily blind. So could we?
Okay.
I mean, I'm not pissing on it. Like we're at the end anyway.
We are at the end anyway. Do you want me to very quickly come up one thing? It's a very short thing anyway. One more thing I was going to say. Miller does the sort of at the back of the crowd rabble rousing thing to cause the distraction.
And
it's like he's very much learned from that guy that he used to stand and watch in the Ceres Station promenade place that always
doing an impression of that dude,
That was pretty much it, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. It's been a long one anyway. We've done another video long before here today as well. So this video...
I apologize for cutting it. I mean, I'm sure we're going to end it soon anyway.
Yeah, we're going to end it soon anyway.
Feel awful.
That's all right. No, not a problem. Not a problem. So we're going to finish up now. Thanks to everybody who's joined us for this special live Space Virgins. And hello as well to video people. In case you're wondering what we're talking about, hopefully we've made it clear that we were talking to the live chat as well.
Yes. Yeah.
I think we did.
Quite a chatty bunch tonight.
Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the thing. I'm surprised we don't get more comments on these videos. We get quite a lot, you know, reasonable amount of views, but there's a lot, you know, I'm surprised more people don't comment on especially the tangents, you know.
I just say that about everything. People don't comment enough in general. Like, it's just gone out of style, and it's like, it's one of the best things you can do to support a creator.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Sorry, Focus Newman. That was very nice.
Thank you.
What a lovely bunch of people.
Lovely.
What a wonderful bunch of people. Bye-bye.